Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Representative Joe Markosik. The budget coming up to the final days. The push is on. So we're going to find out what the state representative has to say about the goings on there in the legislature and what this budget's going to look like. The numbers that I've been seeing, it's even going to be worse than originally reported. First, they were talking about 27.3 billion. Now I've seen numbers down as low as 27.1 billion. So more draconian cuts, more cuts to social programs, more cuts to human needs. I got to tell you, I'm just not getting it. But we will talk to the state representative about that. Find out the inside scoop. In the second hour, Ian Millhiser from the Center for American Progress. He's going to be here talking about the Supreme Court decisions that came down today and really the direction of the court. You know, as we've known for some time, it has been a very, very pro-business court. You name it, it's if it's business-oriented, if it's business-friendly, our Supreme Court will be on their side. And in the third hour, Joshua Holland from Alternet is going to be here talking about Texas, about the great state of Texas. And how we won't make Pennsylvania just like Texas. Gonna make Pennsylvania just like Texas. High poverty, the highest state in the country who pay their workers minimum wage. Yeah, that's what we want here. High uninsured rates, high poverty, and low wages. That's the way we want to build it, baby. That's how we roll. Or that's how our governor wants us to roll. I gotta tell you, I'm not looking forward to that future, which is why we need to stand up, fight back, and be heard, which is why you can call us 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, something caught my attention this weekend. I was, you know, flipping through my Facebook page, and someone had written something that just grabbed my attention. He said that unions con employees by making them feel like their employers just don't care about them. And I said, you know what, I would really like to be in a room with the person who wrote that and have an honest conversation, because this idea of the benevolent corporation, the idea of this corporate form that is so compassionate and caring and has our best interests at heart and wants to nurture us and wants us to do so well, doesn't freaking exist. I mean, where are the adults in the room to say, look, corporations are about money. They're about the union of capital. They're not about society. They don't care about this country. They don't care about democracy. They don't care about if your family's okay, if your kids are fed, if little Georgie's got hemorrhoids. They don't care. They do not care. So when I hear someone say, oh, well, you know, there's this benevolent corporation. They give us jobs. And I keep scratching my head going, no one's ever given me a job. No one's ever come to me and said, Rick, I like you. You're such a nice guy. Your family is so wonderful. We love your family. We want you to have this job. We want to give this to you. We want to bestow these wonderful wages, these high wages. We want to bestow these wonderful health benefits so that your children are taken care of. And this pension, oh, yes, take the pension too. And vacation, yes. Yes, have vacation so you can spend time with your family. I have never had a corporation ever say those things to me. And I would love it if they said it to you. So please, if this is your story, where you were just walking down the street one day whistling, you know, do 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 do, and someone walked up and said, you know what, I like you. I'm going to make all your dreams come true. I would tell you you're full of, well, it. Because the reality is anytime you've gone for a job, the boss sitting across the table goes, you know what, I can make more money off you than you're going to cost me. And the second that you cost him more money than you're bringing in, guess what happens? That's right. You can say it. There's the door. Don't let it hit you where the good Lord split you. And we saw that. September of 2008. The Bush collapse. Hundreds of thousands of jobs every single month for a year and a half. Those compassionate, benevolent, caring employers who cared so much about your kids and your family, they sent in mass a couple million people into the streets. And I ask the question all the time, if it comes between the boss's kids eating tonight and your children eating tonight, who do you think is going to eat tonight? Do you think it's going to be you? And the answer is no. It's not going to be you. It's not going to be your children. So this idea that somehow this benevolent corporation is out there to fulfill all of our dreams doesn't exist. The benevolent corporation is out there to fulfill all the dreams of the shareholders, which is why it's the CEO's job to maximize shareholder wealth. He's there to make sure that their kids get G.I. Joe with Kung Fu Grip for Christmas. Absolutely. And it's their job to push policies that make you work for less. And I always love those people who go, I can make my own deal. I'll go in there and negotiate for myself. I had a friend who was a hiring agent. It's one of those things that, you know, every once in a while you run into people. I played golf with him when I lived in Cleveland. And this whole thing just popped back into my memory. And he was talking about people who would come in and want to sit down and negotiate their wages. And before he even sat down, he knew if he was going to hire you or not, and he knew what he was going to pay even before they sat down. And you got these guys, they want to come in here and they want to negotiate. We're going to negotiate for this and that. I'd like to have this and like that. And invariably, they always negotiated a crummy deal for themselves. Always less than he was willing to offer. But he's like, you know what? If you're happy negotiating yourself a bad deal, I'm happy to give you a bad deal. And I'm happy to pocket the rest. Which is what they did. And I've always found it amazing. And I've always been one of those people who say, you know what? You want to go out and make yourself a crummy deal? Go ahead. The problem is, and this is where I had some faulty thinking, is that an injury to one is an injury to all. So if I somehow allow you to screw yourself, you're taking me with you. Because if you're desperate enough to work for minimum wage, that means down the road they're going to expect me to work for minimum wage as well. And this is this whole move towards the individual. This whole move towards separating people from each other. This whole Chamber of Commerce, corporate America game plan to get people to think, well, I'm an island, I'm a man unto myself. When they know, if they can get you in a box, if they can get you by yourself, they can mug you, which is what they've been doing. They've been pushing this idea of, well, we don't need policies that are going to encourage full employment. No, no, no. We need to keep following that neoliberal trade policy. Keep you desperate, competitive with the Chinese, the Indians. Yeah, that's the way we go. Keep you competitive with those 50-cent an hour workers with no health care or pension. So that you're grateful that you don't get a raise for 3 or 4 years, that you're grateful that, oh, your pay didn't go down, but your health care costs went up. You're just grateful I still have a job. So they push this globalization, and they fear you into accepting all these crummy conditions. And then you know what they do? The best part of all. They're out there pushing this idea that, you know what? You don't need government. Government's the problem. Government destroys jobs. Regulations destroy jobs. And then you start buying it. Yeah, smaller government. Less intrusive. Less regulations. Would create jobs if we just went far enough. I'd say we've gone pretty far. Pretty far. Have we seen job growth? You know, I always think the Charles Dickens novel, and I go back to this, and I'm in the process of writing this all down because, you know, I go back to that A Christmas Carol, and I think of Scrooge, who, you know, I don't think was really scared by the ghosts of Christmas past, present, or future. I don't think he cared about that. Because he treated his workers so badly. I mean, if you look at the Bob Cratchit character in the story, he worked long hours, horrible conditions, pittance of wages, no health care, Tiny Tim's going to die, you know, the whole story. But in Fantasyland, he has a change of heart. He's a benevolent employer after his rebirth. He's benevolent, he's compassionate, he's caring, wants to make sure they have a holiday and health care. And I say, you know, I don't think that the modern-day CEO is afraid of Christmas past or present or future. I think he's afraid of union organizers. I think he's afraid of government regulation. And I think he's afraid of courts that hold them accountable, which is why they spend so much money busting unions. They spend so much money on messaging saying, you can make your own deal. They spend an awful lot of money destroying government. You don't need those regulations. You don't need to breathe clean air or drink clean water. We'll police ourselves. We're good like that. We've learned. We've learned from the past. We won't do it again, promise. And they're afraid of the courts, which is why they've spent an inordinate amount of money packing the courts with Republicans and these pro-business types. So when you see the Supreme Court decisions that came down today, no surprise there. When you see the Supreme Court's decisions that are almost three-quarters of them pro-business, no surprise there. We knew this was coming. And we know it. And who's behind it? Corporate America, the U.S. International Chamber of Commerce. You know, they came out with their big, did you see their big jobs plan? They had their big jobs summit. Did you see that? They had four ideas. We need to redesign government. Yeah, so it works for them against us. Redesign it for them. We need to curb spending. Sure, make sure that there's enough cheap, exploitable labor. Sure. Modernize the tax system so we can pocket more. Since we don't already pay an awful lot. We don't pay an awful lot now. We'd like to pocket the rest and eliminate those onerous regulations. Again, right back to what we've been saying. It's amazing, isn't it? But we keep buying it. And the last thing I want to get to before we take a break, this, I don't know if you saw this story today, a guy named James Verone. He decided that, you know what? He's going to walk into a bank, walk up to the teller, and tell the teller, I'm robbing you. Give me $1, and I'm going to sit in the chair until the police come, because I need health care. I need health care. So I'm going to sit here and wait for the police to take me because my employer doesn't provide me with health care. I can't get a job that provides health care. They're not out there. I'm an older guy. He's 2 years away from Social Security age, or 3 years. He's saying, you know what? I hope I get a sentence of 3 years so I can sit behind bars and wait. Wait till I get Social Security. Wait till I can get onto Medicare. Is that the kind of country that we want to live in? Where your best shot at health care, your very best shot at getting health care, is by going to jail because no employer will get it for you? And I look at that story in Massachusetts we talked about last week. The guy went to his employer and said, you know what, my wife's dying. She's in stage 4 terminal cancer. She's got all these problems. I want to spend some time with her. I need to be there in her final days. And what'd they do? They laid him off. They fired him. Sent him to the curb. That, my friends, is not the compassionate, benevolent corporate form that they want us to believe. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Representative Joe Markosik. Stick around. Right back after this.
in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. We Are Ohio says they've collected far more signatures than needed to put SB 5 on the referendum ballot in November. SB 5 is the bill passed by Republicans gutting public worker collective bargaining in Ohio. The referendum will let all the people of Ohio vote on collective bargaining, and it blocks implementation of the law until the people have had their say on it. We Are Ohio's Melissa Fazekas.
We are so excited to announce that we have blown past our signature goal, and we are reporting 714,137 total signatures collected. As long as we get on the ballot, then the law does not go into effect, and then it will be pending the outcome of the November election. I think that it's just a really strong statement to those extreme politicians who passed this bill that, look, all these people on the ground have said enough is enough.
South Carolina workers want the country to know that the National Labor Relations Board is protecting workers' rights by charging Boeing with violating labor law. The NLRB says Boeing broke the law when it retaliated against union workers in Washington State by locating a new non-union plant in South Carolina and moving 1,000 jobs there. Boeing repeatedly threatened to locate the jobs there rather than in Washington State to avoid union workers. Joe Shelley is a South Carolina member of United Steelworkers.
What I want people to know is that we are not against Boeing coming to South Carolina. We want the jobs here. We do. We just wanted to do it legally. The only way we're going to get a stronger economy and a stronger working class is for the government to enforce the laws we have on the books. We're not asking for them to put new laws on the books. We just want them to enforce the ones we have.
For more than 8 weeks, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York has locked out 390 OPEIU workers instead of bargaining for a fair contract with Job Security. OPEIU President Michael Goodwin, speaking on the Stephanie Miller Show, said it's time that unions that are customers of Blue Cross Blue Shield take action to support these locked-out workers.
They have to say to Blue Cross, when our contracts expire with you, we're not renewing with an employer that does this kind of thing to the workers.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part by ULICO, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company, and OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
We found a better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine, and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. We made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it will probably fail, because our machines don't leave no paper trail.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Mitt Romney and Herman Cain, both Republican primary hopefuls for the Republican side, they've both announced that they're not going to sign the Susan B. Anthony's list of pro-choice or pro-life legislative pledge. Another one of these bizarre pledges that they've thrown out there for these guys to sign. And I got to be honest, I think these pledges are just plain dumb. Because what it's saying is down the road, no matter what happens, no matter what conditions change, no matter what, I will, under no circumstances, change my mind. And that's the kind of insanity that I don't think we need in government. It's the kind of short-sightedness I don't think we need. And I look at our budget here. We've got a governor who took one of these very short-sighted pledges, the Grover Norquist pledge, and now we're talking about only cutting. No revenue enhancements whatsoever. Nothing. To me, it seems insane. That's why I've asked Pennsylvania State Representative Joe Markosik to come talk to us about the budget fight and what's going on, what to expect the next week or so. Representative, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure. Glad to be here.
You know, as we move down the next couple of weeks, the numbers that I'm seeing are actually going down. First, it was $27.3 billion budget. Now I've seen somewhere around $27.1.
Well, right now it looks like, the main rumor, if you will, and they don't really – give us much information. It's all behind closed doors, and you know, it's a backroom deal going on. You know, 27.3 is certainly, I think, going to be the high water mark for them. They don't want to go over that, and we have anywhere from $600 to $1 billion sitting on the table. Additional to that, that was unexpected, that no tax increase necessary, that money's available to spend on these programs to restore some of these very harsh, painful, punishing, draconian cuts that the governor and the House and Senate Republicans seem to want to impose on the people of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, you know, I've talked to a couple of my Republican friends who say, well, you know, they don't want to be mean, but, you know, times are tough. We need to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. And I said, what about the folks who are, you know, wheelchair bound? What about the folks who need the human service programs that are being slashed and the social programs that are being slashed? What about those folks?
Well, you know, keep in mind, even if we take the extra, let's say it's $1 billion, and I think most of us could agree that it is $1 billion. Dollars and spend it to restore cuts, we would still have $2 billion in cuts. You know, we're almost $3 billion in the hole this year. So even if we restore $1 billion, there's still $2 billion in cuts. So by no means is this some sort of a budget, even if we spend that extra money, that's going to be something that a lot of people are going to like. But at least it's going to be less onerous than what's out there. And it's like you say, I mean, the people who are going to get hurt the most are chronically ill senior citizens in nursing homes, handicapped, disabled, and children. I mean, not only children that need special services, but children in general, because they're cutting education by almost, basic ed by almost $1 billion and higher ed by about $300 million.
And the people who get hurt are those at the margins. And I look at the story I was talking about in the last segment, this guy James Verone. Working class guy, worked his entire life, never had any trouble. He's now sick. He's got some ailments, can't get a job that has health insurance. So he walked into a bank and robbed the bank for $1 just so he could get health care.
Well, you know, I've said it even on the House floor. I've said this budget will create a whole new class of caregivers. Now, most of us, I think, want to take care of our loved ones, and we'll do whatever we have to. But when a lot of these programs go away or are underfunded, programs that help the elderly, long-term care, for example, or programs for the handicapped, you're going to get a lot of people that are going to have to quit their jobs, or one of the spouses are going to have to quit their jobs to be able to stay home and give care to a loved one that is very vulnerable and can't help themselves. And there's a huge cost to that, and they're running around, the Republicans and the governor, saying that this is a no-tax budget. Well, when you have to give up your job to take care of a loved one, that to me is a tax. When you have to pay higher tuition, that to me is a tax. Or when your property taxes go way up this year because of the huge cutbacks in basic ed, that in fact is a tax. Might not be a state tax, but you're paying one way or another.
Or when they start privatizing all of your services and you're getting a bill every month or every quarter like I get for trash pickup. You know, where I grew up in Cleveland, trash pickup was something that was done by the city. It was in your taxes. I moved to Pennsylvania. All of a sudden, I get the wonders of the free market. I got to pay my trash bill every quarter.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the private sector, you know, they're not altruistic. They're in it to make money. So there's got to be a return on investment. And I don't blame those people for wanting to make money. That's what the United States is all about, and the capitalist system. But folks have to understand, if you're going to go down that road, it's not free. And somebody's going to have to pay, and there has to be a profit motive involved, or a profit portion of that involved as well.
You know, and in bringing that up, you look at all of the talk of selling off what is ours, what is the commons, the state wine and spirit shops, which bring a ton of money into the state every year, and we don't really have to do much to get that. You look at the turnpike that was talk of selling that off. Here in Harrisburg, the parking garages and everything else. At the end of it, we're going to be basically giving away everything that we've invested in over the years, so someone can profit from it.
Well, that's right. You know, I was very much involved when I was chairman of the Transportation Committee the last couple of terms, and really fought my own governor on the lease of the turnpike. I thought it was a bad idea, even though I had a lot of respect for Governor Rendell. That was one I had to disagree with him on, and I think that would have been a huge disaster had we gone through with that. You know, the turnpike turns out to produce about $600 million a year in revenues, which we can use for other things, and yep, we can use for ourselves, and we don't have to pay the profit out of that to some private consortium.
And as I said from the beginning, if someone's going to take it over, someone's going to give us a bunch of money up front, they're going to want that money back, and quickly, which means they're going to raise the tolls. Why don't we just raise the tolls anyway?
Well, that's right. It's, you know, that, and you talk about the state stores. I mean, that's about $500 million in revenue. About $100 million of that is actually just clear profit that the state gets that would lose. And plus the fact that it's about 4,000 pretty well-paying jobs. If we had any other kind of industry that we thought we were going to lose 4,000 jobs, the governor and the Republicans and everybody else would be in there throwing all kinds of money and incentives to keep them here. And here we have our own that pays, pretty good wages and benefits and all those things, about 4,000 workers that, the Republican caucus and the governor want to just toss out on the street.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Pennsylvania State Representative Joe Markosik. You know, and following that line of thought, let me ask you this. I mean, how much of this do you think is truly the Republicans not believing that the wine and spirit shops are not core government functions, and how much it's just their ideological hatred of organized labor and the fact that a majority of those workers are in collective bargaining agreements?
Well, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, that's really an issue you can divide up into, one, a policy issue, you mentioned, whether or not we should even be in that business. There's a lot of, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle that just feel that we shouldn't, we shouldn't. And then it's also a nickel and dime issue, where what's it do for the state? That's the one I have the hardest time understanding their thoughts on that. It's one thing to disagree about policy, but how can you, turn $500 million a year away that we're going to have to make up some other way? That to me, it just blows my mind how anybody could be for that.
I don't get it either. And that whole charade they tried to play, we're going to get $2 billion, and the other, it's going to fill our budget hole. It wasn't going to do either.
Right. Yeah, and they've backed off of that now. I mean, when they've been basically proven wrong, I mean, it's so embarrassing that they don't even use those figures anymore.
Which is pretty impressive for a Republican to back off of a good frame. Let me go to another framing, back to the budget, if you will. One of the things I started with is this no tax pledge, this idea of taking these bizarre pledges. And I know you politicians, you guys get this thrown at you often. But I gotta be honest with you. I think they're very short-sighted. I think they're counterproductive, and I think they're dangerous. And I look at our budget. There are plenty of opportunities to enhance revenue, plenty of opportunities, to mitigate some of the dangerous cuts that are coming down the road, yet we've got a governor hell-bent against them. To bring up the taxing of the drillers, that would be the first place I'd start.
Yeah, when you think about it, a democracy, and we see the same thing on the federal level, a democracy is designed, and our system is designed for compromise. It's not a dictatorship. It's not designed for one way to have one group to have their say. It's designed for compromise and debate and deliberation. And when that goes away, when the compromise goes away and all those things, the system doesn't work. And people, complain out there. I hear it all the time from the public. Well, our system doesn't work anymore. Well, it's because people don't want to compromise. If people are willing to compromise, the system will work fine. It has for a couple hundred years now. And it's still the best system going. It's just, I always quote Churchill that said, a democracy is the worst form of government ever imagined, except for all the rest.
Right.
So, it's not perfect, but it is a pretty good system, and it works when people are willing to compromise. And when you take these pledges, you're basically saying, going into the job, I'm not compromising on anything. I want my way, and if I don't get it, I'm going to take my bat and ball and go home.
I got a 2-year-old that takes that position quite often. you bring up the word compromise, which is almost a dirty word in today's political language. And, I got to look at the numbers here in the state, and you as a Democrat, I can't imagine you have much say, and there's not much compromise unless you've got some Republicans who are going to join you across the aisle, much like happened last week with the unemployment compensation bill.
That's exactly right. They're not talking to us. I mean, they're nice, and it's cordial, but when the real negotiations are going on, we're not in the room, and that's wrong. I mean, we represent about 5.5 million people, even though we do have we're in the minority. Almost half the state is represented by Democrats in the House and Senate, and yet we're not even in the room. And they've cut off the debate before. They've used their powers of voting things non-generic and all those kinds of things. The cutoff debate, so we hardly even get our say. I mean, and even when we do, we don't have the votes generally, but it's been very frustrating this year.
And that's the point I think people need to really understand, because when these cuts hit home, when, as you pointed out earlier, someone is going to have to quit their job to take care of someone who needs their help, when their property taxes go up, when a lot of this negative stuff starts to happen and people wake up and realize that it's because of this budget, I think it's important for people to understand that Democrats really don't have a say in what's going on. You guys could probably just go home and be just as effective.
Well, it's funny. In the Rules Committee, we actually, somebody mentioned about us not even showing up because, we knew we didn't have the votes. And one of the staff reminded us that even if we didn't show up, they still had a quorum. Just the Republicans alone, there's right. so many of them, they have a quorum, so they really don't need us there. And but that, you know, they're going to have to wear these cuts. It's as simple as that. And they are going to hit home, and they're going to hit hard. People are going to figure out, you know, not right away perhaps, but within the next six months, 8 months or so, that, wow, what, who, you know, how did I vote these guys in? What are they doing to me?
You know, I look at budgets as a moral document. I look at it as a list of your priorities, and you look at the things that they're chopping, and you look at the things that they're giving away, cutting social programs, cutting human services, and then giving money to corporate tax breaks to corporations and leaving loopholes open and money on the table. It kind of shows a mixed priority.
No question. And, you know, it's interesting. The leadership in the House and Senate and the governor have moved so far right. They're really not in touch with the people of Pennsylvania. Whether you're Democrat or Republican or independent, I think most folks are relatively moderate or somewhere in the middle. These folks have gone way right, and I think they're out of step, and I think it's all going to catch up with them down the road, you know, but we're not going to know that for a while, and we just have to keep plugging away.
Last question I've got for you, this budget. Do they get it in on time? And if not, what does that say about the Republicans? Because it's all them.
Well, I think they're going to get it in on time if they have to pass the worst budget in the world for no other reason than they know better than any of us the political stakes of just not having it done on time. After they beat us up for 8 years and actually were part of the problem, and that's why it didn't get done, but they blamed it on the governor, they blamed it on the Democrats. They don't get it done now when they control, you know, both houses and the governor's mansion. I think the media and everybody else will be on them big time, and I think, you know, they're going to try to avoid that at all costs.
I'm there with you. Pennsylvania State Representative Joe Markosik, I appreciate your time. We'd love to have you back again real soon.
Okay, sure, Rick.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When Texas became a republic in 1836, its constitution banned ministers of the gospel from holding any political office. Our problem these days, however, is not ministers in office, but politicians posing as ministers, literally seizing the pulpit to preach and proselytize. To see such Elmer Gantryism in action, look no further than the showboating Texas governor, Rick the Pious Perry. Embarrassingly inept at governing, he has lately turned to prayer as his official solution for all problems. I don't mean a quiet, contemplative kind of praying, but garish public displays. In April, with a biblical-level drought and some 800 wildfires ravaging the state, Perry's gubernatorial response was to proclaim three, quote, days of prayer for rain. The days came and went, but no rain. Presumably, Rick was praying up a storm, but not a drop fell from the heavens. Undeterred, the gubernatorial padre simply doubled down on prayer politics. Proclaiming August 6th as a day of prayer and fasting, he invited all other governors to join him in Houston for a seven-hour prayer-a-palooza dubbed The Response. It's billed as, quote, a non-denominational, apolitical Christian event to unify all Americans by calling upon Jesus to guide us through unprecedented struggles. Wait, Jesus? What about all those Americans who are Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, or other faiths? No room at the inn for them? Adding to this PR fiasco, Perry's co-sponsor for The Response is the American Family Association, a Mississippi-based extremist outfit infamous for bashing gays and Muslims. This is Jim Hightower saying, the governor's staff loudly insists that his prayer fest doesn't have anything to do with Perry's presidential ambitions, which of course means that it does. But I'm fairly certain that God doesn't want anything to do with this goober's show. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be. A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Our stat of the day from the Too Much Online blog asked the question, how broken has the alternative minimum tax become? Understand that Congress created this tax over four decades ago just to make sure that the very super rich, those folks at the upper echelon, the very well-to-do, after all their loopholes and all of their little side games and all their shenanigans, paid at least a little bit, something, you know, a little something, paid a little bit in federal income tax. Well, in 2008, which is, you know, the year that they have for the new year for the IRS data, 10,824 people reported incomes of $200,000 or more and paid zero taxes. Zero, either to Uncle Sam or to any other country. And this is how, that's how broken it is. So all we keep hearing is, well, you know, we got to get rid of that alternative minimum tax. You know, as a rich person, I don't want to pay anything is what they're saying. So, and because most people, I don't think, understand what the AMT is. I really don't. You talk to the majority of taxpayers and everybody hates paying taxes. But when you're someone who's making several million dollars a year, $1 billion a year, I'm sorry, maybe a little something. Just a thought. Just a thought. I got an email over the weekend from Andy, and this is one of those kind of make you think. He writes, Rick, according to Senator Bernie Sanders, Bush created 3 million jobs over two terms, 8 years. Note, President Clinton created 23.1 million jobs in 2 years. Note, this is not the net number of jobs. In the net, Bush lost 2.8 million jobs in two terms because 5.8 million jobs were lost under Bush's two terms. Think about that. You know, they keep talking about how many jobs they created, but not very often do you hear how many were lost under Bush. He also says, note, our country had no new net job creation, zero jobs created over the 10-year period from 1999 to 2009, which, according to the Washington Post, is unprecedented. An entire decade with no jobs created. Nothing. 10-year span. Think about NAFTA. Think about these insane trade agreements. Think about all this stuff that's been going on. And as he points out, Bernie Sanders is one of those people out there saying we lost 46,000 factories in this country during Bush's two terms. 46,000. We've lost all these jobs. Millions of jobs. An entire 10-year span with nothing. No growth whatsoever. And you go, well, why'd that happen? How did that happen? It's because we put business in charge. You know, put Reagan in charge in 1981 with that hands-off business philosophy. H.W. Bush came in, hammered through NAFTA. Clinton signed NAFTA. We're, you know, Clinton was a DLC guy, very pro-business. Bush came in, said, we're gonna let them go. Let the reins go, let the horses run free. And understand that during the Clinton years, business played nice. You know, just like an eager teenager who just got their license. Remember when you got your license, Jake? You're all excited. I'm going to do whatever it takes. Just as long as I get the keys. They're perfect. Perfect little children. So as soon as you hand over the keys, what happens? Well, you found the kid drunk in a ditch wrapped around a pole underwater. Because, you know what? They go to extremes. And this is what's happened. Business is drunk with power. They're sitting on unprecedented amounts of cash. And they're still not hiring anybody. So, you know what? I got to be honest. I'm ticked off at Obama on a lot of levels. But I look at the situation that the guy's in. And you've got corporate America never been more profitable. Wall Street, back. Bonuses flowing. Champagne, caviar, lobster, you name it. The sky is the limit. Life is great, man. It's great. Main Street, man, we're getting screwed. Actually going after cutting wages. Every time we turn around, we hear somebody going after someone's health benefits. If they're not cutting them out completely, they're raising the prices. And why is that? Because we've ceded control of our country to these really big conglomerates. So when the Chamber of Commerce has their big jobs summit, when they're out there saying, well, we're going to make it, we're going to make the choices on how we turn this economy around. Understand, the big plan, redesigning government so that it works for them. We get our permits quicker. We get approvals quicker. We make sure nobody's watching us. Make sure government curbs its spending so we don't have any of those social programs to worry about. We can have a nice, exploitable, cheap working class. Modernize the tax system so we don't have to pay anything, and those workers, they pay it all. And get rid of all those regulations. Now understand who sits on the Chamber's board. The people who are supposed to be bringing us these jobs. The CEO of IBM. IBM shipped 63,000 jobs overseas in that 10-year span. The CEO of Siemens, they sent 15,000 jobs overseas. Accenture, guy who sits on their board, 13,000 jobs overseas. Intel shipped almost 11,000 jobs overseas. Stop and think about where all this these job losses are happening. It's not that we're not creating jobs. It's that we're not creating jobs here. So you stop and you think about the whole neoliberal economic theory, the mainstream economic theory, the theory that, you know, the Friedmans of the world and the Greenspans of the world, they brought us. This main theory of neoliberalism. We need to have free trade. We need to have deregulation. And there's got to be a natural rate of unemployment. And what happens is you begin to accept, and we're going to accept 8% unemployment. Bet my bottom dollar on it. As a society, we're just going to accept that until they fall off the rolls. And then we're going to lose an entire class of people. Understand, that's going to happen. But the part of this that scares me is this whole pushing more free trade, pushing more free trade, pushing more deregulation so that corporations now control everything. Everything. And there's a massive disconnect between the wages that we earn and the productivity and the wages that we and the economic benefit that we make to the company. Back to what I said at the beginning. This idea of a benevolent corporation doesn't exist. What exists is a guy looking at you saying, I can make more money off of you than you're going to cost me. See, we used to have a link between productivity and wages. The harder you worked, the more work you did, the higher your wages. So if your facility was doing well, your productivity was high, everyone shared in the benefits. Corporate America figured out, you know what we can do? We can decouple these. We can push free trade. We can push deregulation so that we can threaten those workers that we're going to move overseas. And we're going to deregulate so there are no laws to make sure that hold us accountable. So if you can decouple that, more profit. So what you've got is Wall Street never more profitable than they are right now. Never. And you've got wages that are stagnant for 30 years. Which takes me back to this whole idea that at some point, I've got to think that the American worker suffers from some form of Stockholm syndrome, some abuse syndrome, some PTSD, something. Something. Because we've identified with our, oh, thank you, benevolent corporation. And during the last couple election cycles, we need people who are more business friendly. Stop and think about how insane that is. You know, over the weekend, this is another one of those moments that makes you think. Over the weekend, I was watching C-SPAN. And Obama did his couple of minute weekly address. And then after him, they had this guy, Senator John Hovind, a Republican from North Dakota. And he gave, you know, the Republican Weekly YouTube address or whatever it is. And there he was, pushing more free trade. Well, the president, he doesn't want to create jobs. He's not going to give us these free trade agreements. Then he went on to say that he wanted to do trade adjustment assistance later. We're going to do it later, much later. You know, right now we need to get these job creating trade agreements. We need to get these passed. And then we'll deal with that other stuff later because it's going to create jobs. And my philosophy has been, if it's going to create all these jobs and we're going to be a gainer in this, then passing the trade adjustment assistance shouldn't matter because we're going to be a net gainer. There'll be places for those people to go. But the problem is Republicans and Bentney Democrats, they know that we need this trade adjustment assistance. adjustment assistance, need it, because we're going to be a net loser. So they're saying, hey, you know, we need them. We need it. So again, back to this whole idea, they don't want to pass the trade adjustment assistance. They don't want to put in this bill. And why? Well, I just found out Florida Representative Dennis Ross, he wants to abolish any aid to workers who lose their jobs because of our insane trade policies. Remember last February when the House Republicans forced us to let the expansion of the trade adjustment assistance program to expire? Remember that? Well, last week, Ross, he came out, introduced H.R. 2165, going to abolish the TAA program entirely. Going to abolish it entirely. And you've got the Republicans out there going, we need to have those three agreements, and we need to have them soon. And Obama is saying, well, we're going to have them sometime before the August recess, according to McClatchy. So again, you know, who's really in charge here? Corporate America. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
You've reached Jenny in the accounts receivable department of Dent Supply International. I can't come to the phone right now. Please leave a message and I'll return your call as soon as I'm available.
Jenny was in constant pain and missing too much work.
I wasn't reliable. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't be what I wanted to be. I knew that I could do my job better. I knew that I could be a better mom. I could be a better wife. But my body wasn't letting me.
Fortunately, Jenny's employer has Capital Blue Cross, and Capital gave Jenny a whole set of services called Better Health Works. Jenny filled out a profile, got online coaching, and called a nurse line.
She talked me out of a very dark time because I didn't know what else to do. Since I had my surgery, now I can give my employer and my family 110% of me.
Capital's Amy Montgomery is happy that Jenny is happy.
It feels great that Capital Blue Cross was able to help Jenny this way.
We really believe in what we do, and I think that that's one of the things that makes us successful. I think it's a perfect example of when you care more, you do more.
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Truth of the matter is the hammer is falling down on public sector workers right now because they're the easy target. They're the one that the business community has pointed their finger at and said, see, they're not suffering like you. Those teachers and those firemen and those people who look over the nuclear plants, they're not suffering enough. They need to suffer like you are suffering. That's what they're telling you. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think? You know, you look at this, and I got to be honest with you. I look at this thing in New Jersey, And again, just like a lot of the other states, Massachusetts, Wisconsin, a number of other states have gone to this, Michigan, Ohio, have gone and stripped rights away from workers who work in the public sector. The idea is, well, you know, if we can restrain them, we can hold them back, if we can push them down, maybe we'll garner some support with everybody else. And the reality is, beating up on one person to appease someone else, I'm sorry, it just doesn't cut it for me. But in New Jersey, which surprises me that New Jersey would pull this and be able to steal collective bargaining rights away from the New Jersey public sector workers, which I'm telling you, there are going to be a lot of heads falling in New Jersey next term. It'll be interesting to watch that go. And I think the Senate president, that Steve Sweeney, is going to be one of the first to go because he's one of the people who really pushed this through, which is basically taking, now get this, the average public worker in New Jersey, the average salary for a public sector worker in New Jersey, now this is all of them leaped into one bowl. But the average guy makes 60 grand a year. And you go, oh, 60 grand a year. Understand, New Jersey has a much higher cost of living than we have here in Pennsylvania. What they're talking about doing in New Jersey is raising their health insurance copays from $900 all the way up to $3,230. And you go, how do you justify that? And then doing that, what they want to do is they're going to steal the ability of those workers to then bargain for health care. I mean, this is the beautiful part of this. What this is doing is it's undermining the entire system. It's saying that whatever wage gains you get, let's say we give you $1 an hour, $40 a week extra in your paycheck, we're just going to jack up your health care costs $40 a week. So it's a zero sum game. Or you know what we'll do? We'll jack it up $50 a week so you lose money. I mean, it's really, you stop and you think about this, it's really a nice scam that they've got going on.
You know, if you do the numbers right, $50 a week, that's about $2,500 a year. That would about cover the cost. By the way, do they have initiative in that state?
No.
They don't. So they don't have a safety valve. Just
no,
like
they're
going
to wait till next election, and a lot of heads
they're basically screwed until the next election.
A lot of heads are going to fall. And, you know, you look at this and you go, this has been the assault that's been going on, and it's what it's doing and what it's designed to do is to be the shining thing in the room. Look, over here, while they're giving away massive tax breaks, while they're doing all of these things to promote business, to profit, not hire people, but to profit. And I've yet to find anybody who really wholeheartedly defends this beggar thy neighbor economic development that we're doing, all of these handouts that we're giving to corporations in the hope, maybe possibly, wish and hope, remember, wish and hope, that these companies will hire people. They're not going to because they don't have to. They're getting you to work harder. They're getting you to work longer. They've got the best of all worlds right now. I mean, it's amazing stuff to me. So don't be surprised, you know, because here in Pennsylvania, we're going through kind of the same thing. So don't be surprised if this language comes here. They are talking right now, but we will see because don't be surprised because they've got, you know, this ability to destroy collective bargaining and take the right to bargain over health care away just like they did in the other states. So like I said, they can give with one hand and take with the other. And right now, you know, they're negotiating. The right now, the contract, as I understand it, is a 4% cut next year, 2% increases the 2 years after that. You know, pay more for your health benefits, rolling furloughs, increased contributions to health care benefits, you know, all of this stuff. And I love the way that they couch it in the Patriot article that we're going to save money. Oh, they're going to save money. You know how they're going to save money? By stealing it. They're going to take it from those workers. Much like, you know, how the big corporations make money. They take money out of your pocket. What I find interesting is one of the articles I read pointed out that a lot of the senior employees, the people who've worked for the state for years and years and years, they're looking at retirement. And they're looking at retirement almost twice the level that they did last year. So, I mean, the people are going, we don't want to do this anymore. And I always ask the question, what's going to encourage the next generation of people to want to get into public service? Who wants to be a school teacher? I mean, who really wants to get involved in this? You know, I was talking to a girl this weekend, took my kid over to the, took kids to the swimming pool, and I was talking to one of the girls who's a lifeguard. And she had originally wanted to get into early special education. And she was just like, you know, I got to be honest. Don't want to get into it. There's no money in it. Look at the stuff that's going on. So she's going on to be a speech pathologist or something along those lines. Or she can work in the hospital or something. She still wants to deal with kids, just not in the public sector because of the abuse that's going on. And I don't blame them. I don't blame the younger generation. You know, you look at the assault. I mean, it's an assault. It's, you know, it's this assault on their profession. It's assault on them personally. I mean, personally, I would get out of education if it were me. They don't make all that much money. I keep hearing this. Oh, they make great money. They make, you know, $100,000 a year. They got gold Cadillac benefits. They got huge pensions. And then when you go and you really realize, and thanks to the idiot over at the Tinky Tank, they put all of their salaries online. I got to see exactly how little the kid, the woman that teaches my children, how little she makes. The person who spends more time with my kid makes almost probably just about as much as the guy who cuts my grass. Tell me that's the right direction for education. And she is fantastic. I loved my daughter's teacher this past year, as I've liked the one she's had in the past. But this year, she was a good teacher. But I saw how little she makes and how we begrudge her. I mean, that's what gets me, Jake. This all-out assault on you make too much. And I couldn't do anything but take it personally.
Oh, I would, too. And here's the irony. These young teachers coming out of college, because of the fact that many of the people who are attacking teachers also try to reduce the amount of money available for student loans, some of these kids coming out of college are in debt six figures or better. And we don't even talk about that. And yet all we hear about is the high salaries. I know in one school district in my county, and this was as of several years ago, they were starting about $29,000. $29,000 for a teacher? Now, how can we say that's too much?
Well, I mean, that's what you pay a manager.
That's not even the average wage in the state.
That's what you pay a manager at Burger King. That's not what you pay someone who teaches your children, who spends more time with your kids than you do. I mean, that's just, it's mind-blowing. But you know what? It's the red meat that the right has thrown out. Because it's viewed as they're not suffering like the rest of us. They're actually saying, we need a raise. We've got kids and families to feed as well. And I'm amazed. I'm absolutely amazed. I'm amazed that as a working class, we have been this easily manipulated. We've been this easily led astray, that we're going to beat up on the teachers before we're going to beat up on those criminals on Wall Street.
You know, if I can make one comment about what you talked about a couple of minutes ago, about the number of people who want to retire from the state, as of now, it's 4,200. But the particulars on this budget haven't come out. Depending on what comes out, that number could rise.
Absolutely. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
But they slashed our funding, they cut all our hours by Washington decree. So here I stand with a long line of cards, everyone yelling at me. When did I become a problem? How did the fall become online? President says, tithing their bill, roll the one that is mine.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. We Are Ohio says they've collected far more signatures than needed to put SB 5 on the referendum ballot in November. SB 5 is the bill passed by Republicans gutting public worker collective bargaining in Ohio. The referendum will let all the people of Ohio vote on collective bargaining, and it blocks implementation of the law until the people have had their say on it. We are Ohio's Melissa Fazekas.
We are so excited to announce that we have blown past our signature goal, and we are reporting 714,137 total signatures collected. As long as we get on the ballot, then the law does not go into effect, and then it will be pending the outcome of the November election. I think that it's just a really strong statement to those extreme politicians who passed this bill that, look, all these people on the ground have said enough is enough.
South Carolina workers want the country to know that the National Labor Relations Board is protecting workers' rights by charging Boeing with violating labor law. The NLRB says Boeing broke the law when it retaliated against union workers in Washington state by locating a new non-union plant in South Carolina and moving 1,000 jobs there. Boeing repeatedly threatened to locate the jobs there rather than in Washington state to avoid union workers. Joe Shelley is a South Carolina member of United Steelworkers.
What I want people to know is we are not against Boeing coming to South Carolina. We want the jobs here. We do. We just wanted to do it legally. The only way we're going to get a stronger economy and a stronger working class is for the government to enforce the laws we have on the books. We're not asking for them to put new laws on the books. We just want them to enforce the ones we have.
For more than 8 weeks, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York has locked out 390 OPEIU workers instead of bargaining for a fair contract with job security. OPEIU President Michael Goodwin, speaking on the Stephanie Miller Show, said it's time that unions that are customers of Blue Cross Blue Shield take action to support these locked-out workers.
They have to say to Blue Cross, when our contracts expire with you, we're not renewing with an employer that does this kind of thing to the workers.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part by ULICO, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company, and OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay.
Yeah, I like that. Billion Dollar Man. Yeah, I love that. That's a good one. Excellent, excellent song there. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. If you like this song, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, one of the things I talk about often is our failure to look down the road, our failure to invest, invest in infrastructure, invest in education, invest in health care, invest in alternative energy, doing a lot of investment. And all I keep hearing is, but Rick, we're broke. We're broke. We don't have any money. Flat broke. Lights are going to go out tomorrow. Everything's going to come to a grinding halt. We're flat broke. Sorry, can't pay for, for education. Your kid's going to have to learn how to pick rocks. But I see this report today that grabs me by the throat and goes, we don't have money for education. We don't have money for healthcare. We don't have money for infrastructure. Okay. You finally beat me over the head with that. Then we hear this report that back in 2004, the administration of George W. Bush decided it would be a good idea to have pallets shrink-wrapped full of cash. In fact, $18 billion worth of cash shrink-wrapped. And where'd they get it? Well, they got it from, the usual sources. The Food for Oil program, remember that? The thing that Hussein was basically hung for? They took it from that. They took it from, stuff that they had sold from Iraq, like their oil. Remember that? And they took it from some other resources that they had, some assets that they had seized, some money that was in foreign banks. So the UN's Oil for Food program, one, sale of the oil, two, and assets in foreign banks, three, total up about $18 billion, according to one of the Iraqi government ministers. Who's saying, look, that $6.6 billion that the Americans are admitting to, It's more like three times that much. So I ask, where did $18 billion worth of shrink-wrapped cash end up? And if we don't have money to invest in education or roads or bridges or any of that stuff, but we have $18 billion to wrap up on shrink-wrapped kids, I think we have kind of a mixed priority, considering that we have spent in Iraq alone more than $1 trillion. So more than $1 trillion that we've used making big rocks small, more than $1 trillion that we've used to, basically bomb them back in the Stone Age and then rebuild them. And, of course, making that the conservative paradise, flat tax, no regulations, no borders for capital, beautiful stuff, nice. They're not really thriving, though, like the conservatives thought they would. It's not the paradise that they were hoping. But still, we've spent this trillion-plus dollars, plus somehow lost. You just lost $18 billion on skids. I don't know how that happens. Just someone put it in their pocket? I would assume $18 billion on skids, you could probably see from outer space with the naked eye. I mean, it's got to be a huge amount of space.
Find out exactly how they doled it out. What did they say? Just did they put out a public notice? Cash available?
Yeah, to the Saudi princes and to all of the dictators around the world. Here, have some money. And I ask, was it in sequential bills? Did we mark it? What's going on? Do we know anything? The answer is no. We don't know anything. But what I do know, and this is what I do know, that when Vice President Joe Biden and Majority Leader Eric Cantor and all these other Republicrats come in to talk about Medicare, I do know you're going to see massive cuts for Medicare. I do know that's going to happen. Mark your bottom dollar. And we're going to see cuts to Social Security, be it through higher limits, through higher age limits, be it reduced benefits. We're going to see it. And this thing on Medicare just has me nuts because you look at all of the money that we have just pissed away. On what? And you're telling me that my kid is going to get less of an education because we got into some bizarre misadventure in the Middle East and we've given out massive tax cuts to the very wealthy? Sorry, Mr. Smith, your kid can't play sports unless you're willing to pay $1,000 a year. Sorry, Mr. Smith, there's so much that we can't invest in our country. And you look at the fact that Afghanistan, who we haven't even talked about yet, this year's budget, on budget, I give Obama credit for this, putting it on budget, something the little shrub never did. But this year, $113 billion we're going to spend in Afghanistan, $113 billion. And the people over at the Think Progress blog, they asked a couple of quick questions. Is what's going on in Afghanistan worth Head Start for nearly 15 million kids? Is it worth that? Is staying in Afghanistan another year worth not insuring almost 58 million children with health care? Is it worth not providing health insurance to low-income workers for 23 million people? I mean, there's so much we could be doing with $113 billion. Like the kids here in this state who are going to get whacked 56% of the higher education budget here in the state of Pennsylvania. We could have given them each $5,500 in Pell Grants and said, almost 21 million of you, go to college. We could have given health care at the VA to more than almost 14.5 million veterans. So much we could be doing. College scholarships to state universities to almost 14.5 million kids. We could hire another nearly 2 million firefighters. We could hire another nearly 2 million elementary school teachers. We could hire more than 1.5 million policemen. We could do a lot of stuff. In fact, we could do like what I'm doing right now, put solar panels on nearly 68 million homes. We could be doing a lot of stuff, but we're not. And why aren't we? Well, because we're hung up on making big rocks small. And look at the Democrats. They're trying. You got to give them a little bit of credit. They're trying. They're pushing for a $112 billion savings in the prescription drug plan that the Republicans, rammed through with some Democrats. I think there were a handful of Democrats that went along. And this is what I love. And I did not know this until a couple of months ago, that there is a difference between what Medicare pays for pharmaceuticals and what Medicaid pays for pharmaceuticals. Medicaid actually negotiates for prices. Medicare has to pay retail. So what the Democrats are saying is there's a $112 billion difference. If we paid what Medicaid pays for the drugs at Medicare, we could save $112 billion. We want to do that. And the Republicans are blocking it, which is amazing to me. So you had 67 House Democrats who signed a letter last week to John Boehner saying, you know what, support our plan. Help us. Help us save money by negotiating for lower prices on our drugs instead of filling the coffers of the drug companies. I'm not going to do it. Why? Business friendly. And I go back. I go back to, you know, to James Verone, the guy who robbed a bank for a buck. He said, you know what? I hope they give me 3 years in jail so I can get enough health care to get on Medicare, because nobody's going to hire me. Nobody's going to give me insurance. I can't buy it in the private market because I'm sick. Nowhere to go. Government won't give me disability. I'm a working guy. Got all these problems that I can't even get diagnosed. I mean, he said he doesn't even know what's wrong with him. He's got some protruding thing in his chest. He's got, you know, aches and all of these pains and all of this stuff going on. He didn't even know what he's got because he can't find a job for more than minimum wage. So he does what I would do. You know what? If I can't make it here, lock me up. At least I'll get some health care there.
You mentioned the prescription drug situation. Remember Billy Townsend, who was the Republican, who was the doorkeeper, if you will. And he made sure that Medicare couldn't, the government couldn't negotiate for lower prices. Left the government, and our president campaigned on the issue of this was wrong and he's going to do something about it. Guess what? Now, here's where the Democrats have left this down. Here's where the president left. In the last 2 years, they've met with him 11 times. The industry has gotten pretty much their way in all kinds of handouts from the government. This is one area where I believe the Obama administration has kind of talked out of both sides of their mouth. That was an absolute disgrace. It should have been an absolute top priority of this administration to make sure that that wrong was rectified. It has cost the American people so much money, not allowing Medicare and the government to negotiate lower prices. And there we have Mr. Townsend, who got a nice big fat job. The President of the United States campaigned on it, said he was going to do something about it, and here we are.
Yeah, you look at that, and you look at the guy there, and the case last week of the people in Massachusetts. What are we going to do? Is this the country that we want to become, where you got to rob a bank to get health care? Is this the country that we want to be, where you've got a couple like Carl and Kathy Cerbello, or he gets fired because he wants to spend time next to his wife as she dies in her final days? Is that the country we want to become? Is that who we are? And at the end, do we really want to have corporate America running this country? And like Jake said, you know, this Billy Townsend, the president of Big Pharma, the lobbyist arm of the pharmaceutical industry, quit his job as a congressman, $100,000+ a year, to take a $1 million position as president of Big Pharma. Why? Because he had paid his dues. He got their bill passed. It should be, to me, that's criminal. It's treasonous. Yet, in our system, he's well compensated.
And it will cost the taxpayers, you and I, over time, hundreds of billions, not millions, billions of dollars. And we kind of throw out that B all the time. I can't imagine what a billion is.
It's $1,000 million.
Right.
Let's take a break. We're right back after this. Stick around.
Why we fight away. This is why we rest of us. Rick Smith.
When Texas became a republic in 1836, its constitution banned ministers of the gospel from holding any political office. Our problem these days, however, is not ministers in office, but politicians posing as ministers, literally seizing the pulpit to preach and proselytize. To see such Elmer Gantryism in action, look no further than the showboating Texas governor, Rick the Pious Perry. Embarrassingly inept at governing, he has lately turned to prayer as his official solution for all problems. I don't mean a quiet, contemplative kind of praying, but garish public displays. In April, with a biblical-level drought and some 800 wildfires ravaging the state, Perry's gubernatorial response was to proclaim three, quote, days of prayer for rain. The days came and went, but no rain. Presumably, Rick was praying up a storm, but not a drop fell from the heavens. Undeterred, the gubernatorial padre simply doubled down on prayer politics. Proclaiming August 6th as a day of prayer and fasting, he invited all other governors to join him in Houston for a seven-hour prayer-palooza dubbed The Response. It's billed as, quote, a non-denominational, apolitical Christian event to unify all Americans by calling upon Jesus to guide us through unprecedented struggles. Wait, Jesus? What about all those Americans who are Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, or other faiths? No room at the inn for them? Adding to this PR fiasco, Perry's co-sponsor for The Response is the American Family Association, a Mississippi-based extremist outfit infamous for bashing gays and Muslims. This is Jim Hightower saying, the governor's staff loudly insists that his prayer fest doesn't have anything to do with Perry's presidential ambitions, which of course means that it does. But I'm fairly certain that God doesn't want anything to do with this goober's show.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, we have our podcast there for your convenience. You know, the Republicans have been losing their mind over this Boeing thing. And the Wall Street Journal had an interesting article today. You know, the Wall Street Journal, the paper of the investor class. Well, they published an article by this Guggenheim guy. He's a Chicago lawyer who has written a book called Which Side Are You On? Trying to be labor when it's flat on its back. It's an older book. But he's going back and he says, you know, look at this Boeing situation. It's more than just about what the NLRB is doing. Because what the NLRB is doing is absolutely right. He says conservatives are in an uproar about the General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board, and that he has filed unfair labor charges against Boeing. He says, it seems the president of Boeing was unwise enough to blurt out that his company would move a production line to South Carolina as a payback for past strikes against machinists in Seattle. He writes, it's dead bang violation of the NLRA, the National Labor Relations Act. And he says, even if it comes as a surprise to Republicans and many other Americans, it is a dead-bang violation. He says Section 7 of the Wagner Act, passed in 1935, states that all workers can engage in concerted activities without reprisal. And, you know, he goes on to say, look, this guy was a gaffe machine. And maybe it's just because for so long the NLRB has been in the pocket of big business that they just forgot. And he's saying, you know, maybe the CEOs have just completely forgotten that there's any law out there at all because they've been breaking it for so long. And he says, you know, there's little to stop these companies from running away from union states. There's almost nothing. But if you're dumb enough, like this guy, to come out and say, well, we did it because of these workers went on strike, this is an absolute, flat-out, blatant example of what the law was written to protect. And But more importantly, he goes on and he talks about the loss of the jobs and the wages that the jobs pay. And this is where I think the more important point is that he's making. First point, Boeing CEO, just an idiot. Dumb as a bag of rocks. You know, just plain country dumb. Not a lick of sense in his head for saying what he said in public. I mean, you say that to your buddies in the boardrooms and, you know, you whisper it to each other. But like I've been saying, these right-wing, these radicals now feel emboldened to come out and say what it is they've been whispering to each other in their cloakrooms, their little think tanks. So he, you know, just like this, came out and said, you know what? I can say it. Well, he's gotten bitten by it. So Guggenheim's main point here, and the other part of this, is that, look, we have in Washington State a very high-skilled workforce. And that high-skilled workforce makes about $28 an hour. Boeing, who is one of the big manufacturers in this country, has made a conscious decision to move to a low-wage state. A low-skill, low-wage state, starting about $14 an hour. And he's saying by having this move from a high-skilled area to a low-skilled area is dangerous for the economic security of the country. It's dangerous for our national security. Because the signal to the rest of the world is that we're following the Walmart path of manufacturing. And he seems to believe, and as I do, that this is really the beginning of the end for Boeing. And he points out a case of this company, Outboard Marine Corporation, that left Chicago back in the 90s, because Chicago was a high-wage area, and they went down south, shot themselves down. We're going to save a boatload of money, paying $10 an hour, had a whole bunch of people there. They went bankrupt in 2000 because they didn't have the skilled workforce. They didn't make the quality product. They wanted to charge the same price. They wanted those extra profits in their pocket. But they didn't want to pay the wages. And he said even Adam Smith could have explained it to him because it's about productivity, it's about skill level, it's about quality. And that's something that in Washington with the high-skilled labor force that they have, they get. Now they're moving to some completely new area that does not have the skill set. They don't. It's going to take a generation to build that skill set. And he says if you look at the history of runaway shops, what it proves is that, you know, as many of these companies go south in one sense or the other, and he says it sounds unfair to the South, and it's not. He says it's union busting. It's union busting that has inflicted real unfairness in the region. It has massive income inequality, and it has inferior schools. And you look at that and you go, yeah, I mean, that's it in a nutshell. You've got a system in place in places like South Carolina that doesn't invest in high education, that doesn't invest in high-skill jobs because they just don't have them. And they're not building them. What they're doing is they're trying to steal from everywhere else. And there's part of me that looks at this, Jake, and I kind of look at it and go, is this, you know, bringing us back to this idea of having this divide between the North and the South, or in this case, the Northwest and the South. I don't know, and I hope not. I'm really not trying to be to make disparaging comments about the Southern states. The reality is what it is.
The reality is that Boeing, and I can relate to this a little bit from the corporation I came from. I think they very much underestimated the value of experience. There's certain things in a corporation that are invaluable. One of them is experience. Many of those employees that work for Boeing for decades gained this valuable experience. The only way you can get it is to go through it. No amount of money will buy that. And I think they forgot. That happened in my corporation. A little bit different. They offered an early out, the first one. We're going back about 6-7 years. Huge number of people took it. Many of them in key spots, they lost that. And from that point on, that corporation went downhill because they didn't have key people in key spots who had the experience and the knowledge. You cannot replace that.
And that's what the other thing that hasn't been talked about. And, you know, one of the last point that he makes is that Boeing is not a product of the free market. And this is something that people don't want to hear, especially on the right. This is an extension of the federal government. A lot of their contracts are government contracts. They build planes because the government said, here's some money, go build some planes. And, you know, they've got an educated workforce because the taxpayers of that area paid to create a workforce for Boeing with exceptional skill. And now they're turning their back on that because they think they can go anywhere. And I got to be honest, I think this guy may be right. This could be that first signal. This could be that first signal. But this whole case, to me, again, very simple. The law is very clear. Boeing broke the law. The problem is no one's going to hold them accountable because they are too big to fail. They're too big for us to go and make them undo what they've done. Understand that. And I do right from the beginning. And I think it's wrong. Eventually it's going to end up at the Supreme Court. And guess what? Guess what? They're a very business-friendly Supreme Court, much like most of the court system is. So if we don't see a lower court shoot this thing down, the Supreme Court most certainly will. But to tell you how far Boeing's tentacles go, what you've got is you've got Paul Ryan, House Budget Committee Chairman. House Budget Committee Chairman today on CNBC. Saying that he wants to give out some $78 billion in tax breaks to these big corporations. Wants to hand out all this money to these big corporations. Because, you know, their tax rates are too high already. And, you know, GE didn't pay a dime. In fact, got a boatload of money. But he pulls in a couple of interesting things. And this is what Ryan had to say. Quote, sure, you can say GE and others pay no taxes, but there are lots of large corporations that pay these high effective rates. UPS was 34% a year, I think. I talked to Boeing CEO Jim McGurney a couple weeks ago, and their tax rate is extremely high, far higher than their competitors. So when you tax American competitors a whole lot more than our foreign competitors tax theirs, they win, we lose. So the people over at the Citizens for Tax Justice, they looked into it. And what did they find? They found that Boeing has taken about $9 billion in profits over the last 3 years. About $9 billion into their coffers. They did not pay any corporate income tax. Zero. In fact, they received a handout of $178 million over that time frame. So they've got the House Budget Committee chairman out there doing their bidding. Out there saying, well, you know, they're a good company. They pay a lot of taxes. No, they don't. No, they don't. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our Supreme Court expert, Ian Millhiser, from the Center for American Progress. A couple of real interesting Supreme Court stories, and, of course, something about Clarence Thomas. We're back after this.
To the Rick Smith Show.
The following message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, but who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Back to the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
When those Walmart guys hear the word unionize, they go completely insane. They'll find out who, and boy, if it's you, you're in for a world of pain. Yeah, I got friends with low wages. They work for Walmart in outrageously bad conditions.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Well, the big decision today, the Supreme Court blocked the Walmart sex discrimination lawsuit. And again, you know, this is one of those you couldn't be really surprised about. You knew it was coming. But, you know, some groups, they surprisingly maybe just weren't paying attention, or they weren't listening to our next guest, who is a policy analyst and justice blogger for American Progress, where he focuses on the Constitution and the judiciary. Ian Millhiser, welcome to the program.
Good to be back. Thank you, Rick.
You know, I look at this case and no surprise here.
No, I mean, unfortunately, this is what we expected. I mean, the oral argument went badly. I thought the justices were very hostile to the argument that the women's attorneys made. And, you know, we saw that hostility today in the opinion that they handed down.
Now, how did this opinion go? Because I'm seeing reports it was a unanimous decision on one side that, you know, that they couldn't go forward because of the number of people, and then there was another decision that went along with this. Explain it.
So there's a bunch of steps. There are a bunch of hurdles you need to clear in order to bring a class action. A class action is when lots of people join together who have the same legal interest in order to bring a lawsuit together, and that way they can pool their resources and they can get one really great legal team instead of several less great legal teams. One of the things that you have to do is you have to show that you have a sufficiently common interest. And then if you have that common legal interest, you have to clear another hurdle, basically if you want money damages. And so there were 8 votes on the Supreme Court. There were 9 votes on the Supreme Court who said that there were not enough. They did not clear the second hurdle. They didn't clear the hurdle that allows you to get money damages in most cases.
Right.
5 of the justices, the 5 most conservative justices, said they didn't even clear the first hurdle. They didn't have enough in common that they could bring this lawsuit in the first place. But you still had 4 justices who suggested that, you know, if we're up to us, we might not let them get all the back pay or all of the money that they think that they probably deserve. But there's other remedies that we can do, such as ordering Walmart to stop doing this moving forward. And it looks like that's not going to happen now.
So, in looking at this decision and some of the other ones, how in danger are class action suits? You know, because as I'm looking at this, it appears to me if you're screwing people for small amounts over a large number of people for a little bit here, a little bit there, you're okay.
Yeah, and you know, the worst part of it is this is the second most important class action case this term. The worst class action case this term was a case called Concepcion, which came down about a month ago.
I think we talked about that.
I'm sorry?
I think we talked about that when that happened.
We did. That was the case that said that your employer or your cell phone company or bank or whoever can force you to sign away your right to bring a class action in the first place before they'll hire you or do business with you. So, you know, the Walmart case is a real blow to more than 1 million women who have, you know, worked in a very sexist environment in the Walmart stores. But after the Concepcion case, all that Walmart needed to do was tell them, hey, either sign this contract, signing away your class action rights, or you're fired. and there's now not anything that workers can do when they're presented with that contract.
Yeah, again, you know, this is the best Supreme Court money can buy.
No, it's exactly right.
And I keep telling people, you know, who are, you know, I'm not overly thrilled with President Obama some days, but I keep thinking the next president could appoint two, possibly three justices, because Anthony Kennedy's not getting any younger, Ruth Bader Ginsburg not getting any younger, and Breyer not either.
Right, and neither is Scalia. And, you know, it's a really important point because the next president is going to change the Supreme Court drastically. If Obama gets a second term, he could wind up replacing Scalia or Kennedy. And that would mean after years and years and years of having about 30 years of having a conservative Supreme Court, it would switch back and we'd have, you know, not the court that we had under Earl Warren and Bill Brennan in the 1960s, but we would have a much more progressive court. At the same time, if things go the other direction, someone could get to replace Justice Ginsburg with a very, very conservative justice, and there is a lot of daylight between Justice Kennedy, who's the current swing vote, and Justice Scalia, who would become the swing vote in many cases if there's one more conservative on this court.
Well, that's a scary prospect. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Ian Millhiser, policy analyst and justice blogger for American Progress. He focuses on the Constitution and the courts there. You know, you brought up, you know, replacing, you know, Thomas and replacing some other. How about looking at replacing Scalia? How about replacing Thomas? I know it seems like he stepped in a bit of hot water here recently.
Yeah, he's in the middle of a gifting scandal right now. And this is really shocking if you want to talk about, you know, wealth and corporate influence on the court. There's this gentleman named Harlan Crow who just keeps on giving gifts to Clarence Thomas. You know, he gave his wife $500,000 to go off and start a tea party group. He gave Clarence Thomas a $19,000 Bible. A group that he's on the board of, called the American Enterprise Institute, gave Thomas a $15,000 bust of Abraham Lincoln, and AEI, by the way, filed a lot of briefs in front of the Supreme Court. So Thomas keeps taking all these gifts from people, you know, some of them from people who have an interest in the cases that he's deciding. And we've seen this movie before. In the late 1960s, there was a justice named Abe Fortas, and it was the same story. He had a sugar daddy who was giving him money. He had a group of wealthy businessmen who were finding ways to shuttle funds to him, and that was so shocking. You know, people were so stunned that a Supreme Court justice would be, you know, siphoning off a little money from all these wealthy interest groups that Fortas was forced to resign in disgrace. You know, the fact that Justice Thomas is walking around holding his head high shows you, one, that he doesn't understand precedent, because there's a clear precedent for what justices need to do in this circumstance, right. And two, it just shows you how oblivious he is to what he's doing.
Well, part of me shows the difference of times. I mean, to be honest, don't you think had Fortas not resigned, it would have been a huge hue and cry. The citizens of this country would have, you know, been angry, and there would have been hell to pay. I don't know today that you would have that many people angry, especially on the Tea Party side, especially on the radical right.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what's so interesting about the Fortas example. You know, it was Walter Mondale. You know, Fortas was actually a big liberal justice, and it was Walter Mondale, a Democrat in the Senate, who was pushing very hard to get him off the court. Chief Justice Warren, one of the great liberal lions of the Supreme Court, actually went to Fortas and said, look, you've caused too much harm to the court's reputation. It's time for you to go. Now, I'd like to think that Chief Justice Roberts would have the integrity to turn to Clarence Thomas and say, this institution is more important than you, and it is more important to our political agenda. But I just don't think that's likely to happen.
Oh, I don't think it is either, because he's a Republican operative, if you will. You know, I loved the whole push up to getting Anthony Weiner out, how, you know, they say, well, you know, Republicans, when they're in a scandal, they resign. The Democrats, they don't. And they pushed Weiner out. Here an example of, and when I look at the amount of money and the amount of gifts that you're talking about, this is, to me, clear ethics problem.
Yeah, and you know, with Weiner, one of the biggest tragedies of the Weiner scandal, you know, the guy's a scumbag, But he was a really effective advocate against a lot of the really shady stuff that Clarence Thomas was involved in. He was the first person to call for Thomas to recuse when it looked like he might have a problem in the Affordable Care Act case. I mean, he was dogged in going after these ethics problems that Clarence Thomas has shown. And we don't have someone else like that in the Congress now that Wiener is gone. I am hoping that someone is going to step up. Because, you know, this is serious right now. You know, the last time we had a gifting scandal like this was Abe Fortas, and he had to resign.
And I'm going to make my prediction. I don't think he's going to. I think they're going to protect him. I think they're at all costs because they don't want this president to appoint another justice.
No, and I think that, you know, that's a very safe prediction.
Well, look at me making safe predictions. But yeah, I mean, I look at this, and again, that's exactly what it is. One other case I want to talk real quickly about on the Supreme Court today, which I think is kind of interesting. They rejected the global warming lawsuit.
That's right. And, you know, this is another one of those cases that was kind of like the Walmart case, where the court was unanimous in agreeing that, yeah, we can't let this claim stand. But they split in a way that, you know, that really changes the outcome depending on, you know, whether you take what the moderate justice wanted to do or whether you take what the conservative justices wanted to do. So the whole court said, yeah, this environmental suit where people are trying to get the federal courts to help regulate greenhouse gases, that's not something the federal courts should be doing. That's something that we want the policy experts within the EPA to be doing. But the conservatives, the foremost conservative justice, wanted to take it a step further. They wanted to say that even if EPA didn't exist, even if Congress would repeal the Clean Air Act tomorrow and eliminate the EPA, even in that set of circumstances, it still wouldn't be the job of the federal courts to step up and protect our environment. And that's a gross departure from existing law. Existing law has always said that if nothing else, a landowner has the right to the fair enjoyment of their land. And that means that they don't, you know, there shouldn't be pollutants coming in and preventing them from enjoying their property.
So basically what you're saying, if I'm getting this right, because the Republicans are saying that, you know, we don't need regulations. Corporations, they will police themselves. And if they don't, they don't want to get sued. They don't want to be poor. I forget who the congressman last week who went on this about. He said, they're going to protect themselves. They don't want to be poor, so they don't want to be sued. So what you're saying here, if I'm getting this right, is that they wanted to take it a step further and say that even if the EPA didn't exist and you polluted their water, contaminated their land, whatever, they wouldn't have the ability to sue?
That's right. So the conservatives wanted to say, you know,
wow,
EPA doesn't exist, you're out of luck. The other justice, the more moderate justice, it was really more of a technocratic decision. They said, you know what, it's better to have expert regulators, climate scientists, policy experts with environmental experience to be the ones setting our environmental policy than it is to have judges doing it, because judges don't know that much about
environmental
policy. And that strikes me as not a crazy decision.
Yep, I agree with it.
But to then turn around and say, even without the EPA, you get nothing, that's a bridge too far.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Emil Heiser, I appreciate the time and the update and the keeping us informed on what's going there in the Supreme Court. I look forward to having you back again.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk.
Just couldn't be Sadie Paper's switch out.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseccu.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make things happen!
Seems like things are kind of upside down. Choke a few someone to turn around.
Herman Cain train. Love that guy. Yeah, on one hand, you know, you got to give him credit. At least he's got the foresight, and I'm going to give him a compliment, him and Mitt Romney, the foresight to not take one of those stupid pledges like our governor took. Again, you know, whenever you take these pledges, nothing good comes of them. You know, you got the Susan B. Anthony pro-life group who wanted all these Republicans to take the I'll never support abortions under any circumstances kind of a bizarre pledge. And then you get Rick Santorum ran around, oh, yeah, sign me up. You know, Michelle Bachmann right out there, sign me up. Amazing. But Herman, no. Going to hold back on the pledge. Our Borowitz report for the day. Texas Governor Rick Perry announced his bid for the Republican presidential nomination yesterday, unveiling his official campaign slogan, which is, what harm could a governor from Texas do? I'll let that sink in for a second. Go ahead. Think about it. In throwing his hat into the ring, Governor Perry explained his earlier reluctance to run, saying, quote, I promised the people of Texas I would destroy the state by 2012. And now it looks like we're on track to do that. Governor Perry said he had hoped to bring down the cost of the federal government the same way he reined in the cost there in Texas, quote, by making the state no longer habitable for human life as we know it. He said that his plan to eliminate the states one by one was picking up steam with support from Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and Florida Governor Rick Scott. As president, Governor Perry promised that he would push a three-part agenda. Eliminate education, eliminate health care, and pray for the rapture. He said one regret from his tenure as governor was that Texas never seceded from the United States, but added, as president, I promise that the United States will secede from planet Earth. In related news, the GOP presidential candidates are pretty much perfect, according to new poll of voters named Barack Obama. Yeah, I kind of get that. Kind of get that as well. Did you see over the weekend Michelle Bachmann got glitter bombed? Yeah, she's gonna join the ranks of Newt Gingrich and Tim Pawlenty. And you know, as I watched the video, and again, I could care less. As I watched the video, Bachmann's walking off stage. You know, to go down the steps to leave. And this woman comes with, really, you could see her from a mile away with the intent of doing something. You don't know what. And at the last second, she just throws all this glitter at her. And I'm going, if I'm Michelle Bachmann, I'm firing every person on my security detail for allowing that to happen. Even still, it's quite possible, you know, that Michelle Bachmann just wanted to join the club of people being glitter bombed, because I'm thinking, and there's part of me that's kind of, you know, kind of struggling with this, that if you're glitter bombed by the, you know, the gay and lesbian community, that on the radical right is kind of like a badge of courage, don't you think, Jake? At some point, it's got to be. It's like they wear it like a badge of courage.
Perhaps, but do you really think she knew what it was, what it was, what it meant?
No, I don't.
I doubt it. By all accounts, that's not a big issue with her. The gay issue.
What are you talking about?
I mean, she's not. Well, no, wait a minute. Let me clarify. By all accounts, in the early part of her career, she literally ran shrieking away from several gay activists that wanted to talk to her in a bathroom. And, my point is, it's not a big issue. In fact, what I mean is, now wait a minute. What I mean is, she's pretty much anti.
You think?
Yes, I do.
Pretty much.
I misspoke. I didn't mean it wasn't a big issue. Let me put it to you this way. I don't think too many gay people are going to vote for
her. Anyway, she was speaking to reporters outside the Republican Leadership Conference this weekend. And kind of interesting, she said she wants schools to teach creationist theory of intelligent design. And she said, quote, "What I support is putting all the science on the table and letting the students decide." Well, let me ask you. Sorry, call it what you want. Intelligent design isn't a scientific theory. It's more like a fairy tale. So I find it interesting that we're going to teach it, just like science. It's not science. Anyway, she said that she supports it. And the reason I bring it up, because Miss Tea Party, you know, she is Miss Tea Party. She should have been on the stage with the contestants for Miss USA, who this question about creationism was posed to. And surprisingly, you had a couple of them, two of them, in fact, who flat out, no, shouldn't be taught in school, don't want no part of it, I don't believe it, it shouldn't be there. The woman from Kentucky, I'm not even going to bother trying to butcher her name because, she did her state proud, you know, home of the Creation Museum, saying, quote, that scientists have their different theories. Really? She says, I don't believe it's a good topic for school subjects, you know, and all. Because we don't want to teach evolution in our schools. No. The woman from Alabama was just the best, though. She said, I don't believe in elevation. Nope. No elevation at all. No, she said, I don't believe in evolution. I don't believe in it. It should be taught in schools, and I would not encourage it. She wouldn't encourage it. So, you got a couple. And what I find interesting is that, you know, they all the contestants knew this question was coming, and they struggled with it. The report was 96% of them struggled. They were either confused by what evolution was, and they were confused that evolution of the species within the origin of life, not the same, or said that, you know, variation, like Miss Michigan, she said that it's silly and ignorant not to know both sides. And I'm kind of going, you know, if you're given the question in advance, shouldn't you have a better answer? And then the other part of me kicks in, the male sexist pig of me, and there is a part of that. Do I really give a rat's behind what somebody in a bathing suit thinks? No, I don't. They're not there for their intellect. You know, if I want that, I know a whole bunch of people who can inspire much better than that.
I have one question for the creationist. How did Noah, how was he able to get a baby dinosaur away from their parents? It couldn't have been an adult because he didn't have enough room in the ark. So it must have been a baby dinosaur, obviously, and dinosaurs, according to them, if you believe creationism, they say it goes by 6,000 years, you know, apparently, those bones that they found, that would have meant that happened 6,000 years or sooner ago. So how did Noah, in his He must have been one smart cookie.
They dug up eggs.
Is that how they did it?
They dug up eggs.
Is that what they did?
They dug up eggs.
I never thought of that.
There you go. See, well, it's a good thing you're listening to the show.
Maybe we ought to contact these creationists. And, you know.
Well, there's a museum in Kentucky you can go to.
There you go.
In fact, they've got a place where you can see the dinosaurs right there on Noah's Ark, in fact. They've got all the answers. All you got to do is go to the Creationist Museum. Anyway, Michelle Bachmann, now out there, you know, talking about economics. And first, she's talking about creationism. She's multifaceted. Love her. She came out and said that Canada didn't do anything to stimulate their economy after the Great Recession. They did nothing, according to her. Nothing at all. Unlike us, who, you know, did everything. You know, because, you know, Canada is this great conservative state. Hold on, wait a second. Doesn't Canada have national health care?
Yes, they do.
Oh, wait a second. That's kind of... Because she wants us to be like them. National health care, I'm in favor of. But she's saying that, you know, Canada didn't do anything. When in reality, they did do some stimulating of their economy. They spent about 40 billion Canadian dollars, which, you know, if you were looking at equal-sized countries, would be about $360 billion. Being spent in Canada compared to our $787 billion, of which 40% we gave away in tax breaks, and then didn't spend the rest the way I would have. But I would have done things differently, and we've talked about that for some time. Not to mention, they weren't in as bad a shape as we were in either, because they had restrained a good portion of their housing market. They had tighter regulations. And I find it interesting how they like to go and rewrite that little bit of history. That, you know, they didn't do anything. They did an awful lot. They did a lot of building. And they had regulations in place that helped them stay away from some of the really negative stuff. So I find it quite interesting that our queen there looks at Canada and says, well, you know, they didn't do anything. They just let the free market, the invisible hand. The invisible hand did it all. It was magic, just like creationism. Magic just happened. Someone said, let it be, and the magician let it be. And the sad thing is if she were in charge, now think about her being president. If there is a massive, massive crisis, think about what she's going to be willing to do. Do you think she'd be willing to extend unemployment benefits to help families who are struggling from the jobs that they lost through no fault of their own because the benevolent corporation said, sorry, no more work for you? Do you think she'd do that? Do you think she'd extend food stamps to families who are struggling to make ends meet? There's part of me that says no. Tough it out. Tough love. Because she seems to me to be a very tough love type person. You know, look at what's going on here in Harrisburg. We got a governor who wants us to be like Texas. A state that has one of the highest uninsured rates in the country, the highest child poverty rates in the country, the most minimum wage workers in the country, one of the lowest educational rates in the country on the standardized test scores, one of the worst in the country. Is that what we want to emulate? Is that the direction we go? I hope not. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Josh Holland from Alternative about his piece, Texas is a shining example of right-wing governance in action, and that's why it's a complete basket case. He wrote it last week, and it really goes through the whole scenario, all the arguments that Governor Corporate will make to try and make us emulate the right-wing state of Texas, and the whole argument that the right is making to we should on a national level emulate this whole basket of bizarreties. We're going to take a break. We're right back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We Are Ohio says they've collected far more signatures than needed to put SB 5 on the referendum ballot in November. SB 5 is the bill passed by Republicans gutting public worker collective bargaining in Ohio. The referendum will let all the people of Ohio vote on collective bargaining, and it blocks implementation of the law until the people have had their say on it. We Are Ohio's Melissa Fizikas.
We are so excited to announce that we have blown past our signature goal, and we are reporting 714,137 total signatures collected. As long as we get on the ballot, then the law does not go into effect, and then it will be pending the outcome of the November election. I think that it's just a really strong statement to those extreme politicians who passed this bill that, look, all these people on the ground have said enough is enough.
South Carolina workers want the country to know that the National Labor Relations Board is protecting workers' rights by charging Boeing with violating labor law. The NLRB says Boeing broke the law when it retaliated against union workers in Washington State by locating a new non-union plant in South Carolina and moving 1,000 jobs there. Boeing repeatedly threatened to locate the jobs there rather than in Washington State to avoid union workers. Joe Shelley is a South Carolina member of United Steelworkers.
What I want people to know is we are not against Boeing coming to South Carolina. We want the jobs here. We do. We just wanted to do it legally. The only way we're going to get a stronger economy, a stronger working class, is for the government to enforce the laws we have on the books. We're not asking for them to put new laws on the books. We just want them to enforce the ones we have.
For more than 8 weeks, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York has locked out 390 OPEIU workers instead of bargaining for a fair contract with job security. OPEIU President Michael Goodwin, speaking on the Stephanie Miller Show, said it's time that unions that are customers of Blue Cross Blue Shield take action to support these locked-out workers.
They have to say to Blue Cross, when our contracts expire with you, we're not renewing with an employer that does this kind of thing to the workers.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part by ULICO, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company, and OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas is a great state. We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
They're selling make-believe and we don't buy that hill. Cause in the real world they're shutting Detroit down. While the boss man takes his bonus pay and jets on out of town.
Yeah, well, we could be the Texas of the Northeast. Don't you know that? Our governor, Governor Corporate, he said it. He wants to be like Texas. In fact, today they're putting a bill on his desk that's going to enable people to use deadly force, while not having to leave, while not having to flee. You know, someone can confront you in your front yard, you shoot them. Or like the thing in Texas. Remember that Joe Horn guy?
Okay, he's coming out the window right now.
Remember this?
I'm sorry, but he's coming out the window.
Don't go out the door.
Guy's neighbors
Horn.
Being robbed.
Mr.
Joe Horn's in his house.
I'm going out the window. I'm sorry. I ain't letting them get away with this. They stole something. They got a bag of something. I'm doing it.
Mr. Horn, do not
I'm sorry.
The house.
This ain't right, buddy.
You're going to get yourself shot if you go outside of that house with a gun.
You want to make a bet?
It's coming to PA.
The house. I don't want you going outside, Mr. Horn.
Well, up here it goes, buddy. You hear the shotgun clicking, and I'm going.
Don't go outside. My gun ready.
No, you're dead.
Yeah, well, Mr. Horn went out in the front yard, shot two people in the back. He was robbing a neighbor's house. Castle Doctrine. Coming to PA. How wonderful. But there's this frame that we want to be like Texas. You know, that they've pushed this out there and they're spewing this wonderful picture of how they're creating jobs and everything's prosperous. And like the guy said, you've never seen prosperity like you've seen in a right to work state. like Texas. That's why when I saw this article by Josh Holland over at Alternet, he's an editor over there, just about this, I said I got to have him on the program. That's why I've asked him to come on. Josh, welcome to the program.
Hey, Rick. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm looking at this article you wrote. Texas is a shining example of right-wing governance in action, and that's why it's a complete basket case. And I go, is this our future? Is this the future of Pennsylvania? High unemployment, high uninsured, high child poverty, high minimum wage jobs. Is that our future?
Well, I hope not. I mean, you have a better political culture in Pennsylvania, that's for sure. And I don't think that you're going to strike oil. That's unlikely. But you could get digging for it, you know, and hopefully get some of that Texas miracle.
But what we've
got. It's amazing to see Rick Perry go around the country as he is now, claiming that conservatives have won the battle of ideas. And he's saying that this is a Texas miracle. We've given, you know, we've deregulated. We've given a lot of tax breaks to corporations, politically connected corporations. And we've seen this explosion of prosperity. Now, what Texas has seen, in fact, the kernel of truth is that they've added a lot of jobs. 37% of all new jobs added in the last years have been located in Texas. What they don't tell you is that this is basically a function of adding a huge amount of population. Texas's population has grown by 20% in the last decade.
And that's the
largest amount of population growth of any state in the country. Now, we know the big lie, the idea that wealth producers, wealthy people, create jobs out of the goodness of their hearts. That's not true. We know that demand for goods and services creates jobs. And when you add 20% of the population, you're adding a lot of people who need goods and services, and of course you're going to add a lot of jobs. A huge expansion of the workforce does not lead to prosperity, however. And what they're not telling you is that Texas has had by far the slowest wage growth since 2007, since before the crash. Look at on the national average, when you look at weekly wages, they've increased since the crash by 5% on the national level. And in Texas, they've only increased by 0.6%.
Yeah, but they have jobs. They have jobs. They may be minimum wage jobs, but at least they're working. And
that's right.
And I got to look at that. And I got to look at that. And I've got to say, isn't that the conservative worldview? Isn't that the vision of this country? When you listen to people talk about the great leveling off, and you hear people talking about this, we need to get people back to work, get rid of the minimum wage, like Michelle Bachmann said, it's that mentality. If we can get a whole desperation class out there, that's going to be good for the economy.
I mean, the Republican Economic Committee in the House actually issued a report where they said, look, one of the good things about laying off a lot of public sector workers is that they're highly educated workers who will then be out in the workforce, and that'll increase the labor supply, and that's going to drop down wages.
Yep.
So you're right. We're looking at, you know, a concerted effort, or at least a group of people who are very comfortable with this idea of ever, you know, pushing down the bottom, the floor. And the result in Texas is catastrophic. If you look at education, they lead the country in the most, in the highest share of their population with no health insurance. It's a basket case of an economy. And it's just remarkable for me that they have the nerve, the chutzpah, to go out and say that this is evidence that conservative policies in action yield these wonderful results, which is what, again, Rick Perry is saying. And conservatives across the country are calling for him to run for president based on this entirely mythical Texas miracle.
Well, I mean, you don't need to. The good frame doesn't have to be true. It just has to sound good. And look, there are people getting rich in Texas. The people who matter are doing very, very well. Those working people, especially all those 20% that came into the state, I think the majority of them are from out of the country. We don't care about them. And here we care about the business owners. That's who they care about.
That's right. And if you look at a state that has the highest share of its population earning the minimum wage in this country, tied with, I think it was Mississippi. So at the bottom of the prosperity ladder. But then if you look at its overall average income, it's quite high. They've got a lot of oil revenues and natural gas revenues. And what that says to me is that there's really, really extraordinary inequality in Texas.
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is if you and I were having lunch together, our incomes probably wouldn't be all that outrageous. But if Bill Gates sat down with us, the three of us would be we'd be averaging a whole boatload of money, even though you and I are still poor.
You're exactly right. It's why you get into trouble when you use averages. You know, there's another piece of this story, which is, if anything, even more brazen, which is that Rick Perry's going around and saying that what they did was, and this, there was a feature editorial in the Wall Street Journal that I quote in my piece. The conservative storyline is that they've been fiscally responsible, right? They've adhered to these limited government, fiscally conservative policies. When in the reality, when in the just hard, cold numbers is that Texas is grappling with a huge, huge budget deficit, and I believe it's the third largest out of 50 states in the United States over the next 2 years. Now, over the last two years, they closed almost all of their budget gap by taking federal stimulus funds while Rick Perry was going around and saying that those stimulus funds were going to devastate our futures. So the hypocrisy is really impressive.
Well, I mean, would you have it any other way? I mean, really, honestly and truthfully, nobody who's going to vote for him cares about that.
I mean, that is the case, but I mean, we have to certainly establish at least a baseline of reality. I mean, you know, this is kind of the grand and overarching progressive task at this point, is to push back on some of these really easy, nonsensical claims. And this is one of those things, Rick, where, you know, it's very, very simple to put it on a bumper sticker. Rick Perry can say, rightly, that his state added 37% of all the net jobs added in the recovery. The real explanation for what's going on is a lot more complex.
Right. And it has to do with, as you pointed out earlier, the demand, which is what I've been saying from the beginning. You want to get this economy going, increase wages, bring on the Employee Free Choice Act, stop these big companies from stealing from their workforce, stop these states from stealing from their workers. At some point, I'm hoping that the American worker who seems to be suffering from some type of Stockholm syndrome wakes up out of their trance and says, I'm tired of making these corporate robber barons wealthier. I'm tired of making Wall Street wildly wealthy. I'd like a little bit of it for myself.
Well, that's absolutely right. And we see that, you know, there's a big feature in the Washington Post today about the kind of widening income gap in this country as CEO pay explodes and, you know, working people's wages are basically stagnating. Well, you know, this is a demand problem. And the core problem in the economy right now is not, you know, some sort of concern among employers about some future regulation that may come, may not come, some future tax that may come, may not come. It's a lack of demand. And I've looked at every single employer survey in the last few years, and all of them say lack of customers, lack of demand, that's the big problem.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Texas, there's a few other things I should point out. You know, it's done very well with spiking energy prices. This is also not something that is, you know, a conservative policy. It's also the case that Texas was particularly hard hit during the S&L crisis. So what they did was, because they were devastated by that financial crisis, they had tighter lending rules than the rest of the country, and they weren't at the real epicenter of the mortgage meltdown. This is again something that it's so reverse of Perry's claim, because now you see conservatives very, very aggressively opposing these kinds of tighter lending restrictions that helped Texas weather the storm.
What's interesting to me, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it's that frame that the business community, the people who run this country, are pushing. I was reading the Chamber of Commerce's How We're Going to Create Jobs, and it's just, you know, it's rehashed stuff from the past. Redesigning government was one of their ideas, you know, so it works better for them and not so well for us. We need to curb spending, so we have a class of poverty workers and desperate workers. They need to modernize the tax system so they can pay even less than nothing, maybe get a lot more back, and eliminate regulation. So, I mean, it's the whole right-wing cocktail that has not worked, will not work, but they, again, you can't waste a good frame.
Well, that's right. And, you know, you have very dedicated kind of propaganda organizations putting out this story again and again. There's power in repetition. And they just, you know, what you said is correct. That is a conservative cocktail. All economic policy seems to boil down to these very simple and, you know, and demonstrably false claims about taxes and regulations and freeing, you know, those enslaved wealthy people so that they can make jobs, you know, out of the thin air, apparently.
Well, like Michelle Bachmann said.
We're running out of rich people in this country.
Yeah, we are running out of rich people.
Obama. Running out of rich people because of Obama.
Terrible. That's a big problem.
Yeah, it's a big problem. Yeah. we can't tax anybody anymore, evidently, because all the rich people have left the country, according to her. But no, I look at this, and you know, somebody on my Facebook page said that you know unions and you know all these people are going after employers, saying that the employers don't care about their workers. And I'm saying, at some point, don't we have to wake up and be adults and realize that employers don't care about us? The Chamber of Commerce does not care about me at all. They care about profit.
Well, I mean, they have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to maximize profit. That is actually their duty. They must care about profit. They must not care about the welfare of society as a whole. And if they were to privilege social well-being over profits, they could actually expose themselves to lawsuits.
Absolutely.
From their investors.
But at the end of the day, the benevolent corporation has never existed. And as the frame that I use, if it comes down to their kids eating or yours, your kids are going to be hungry in the morning.
Well, you know, this gets down to the real rock bottom justification for the labor movement. If you have individual workers negotiating with these large corporations, their own salary, their own benefits, without the benefit of the knowledge of the workforce and the marketplace that unions bring to the table, then, of course, you can't have a free market labor transaction.
And
it's a market failure.
Yep. And again, but you have people who keep pushing this frame. I'll make my own deals. And I used to believe that was okay. Go ahead, make your own crappy deal. But the problem is, you know, when he makes a bad deal, I end up getting stuck with it too.
Well, you're absolutely right.
Anyway, a great piece that you've written. Texas is a shining example of why we in Pennsylvania don't want to be like Texas. Again, you can read Josh Holland's article over at Alternet, or just go to our site at thericksmithshow.com and click on his name. Take you right there. Joshua, always great talking to you. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Texas became a republic in 1836. Its constitution banned ministers of the gospel from holding any political office. Our problem these days, however, is not ministers in office, but politicians posing as ministers, literally seizing the pulpit to preach and proselytize. To see such Elmer Gantryism in action, look no further than the showboating Texas governor, Rick the Pious Perry. Embarrassingly inept at governing, he has lately turned to prayer as his official solution for all problems. I don't mean a quiet, contemplative kind of praying, but garish public displays. In April, with a biblical-level drought and some 800 wildfires ravaging the state, Perry's gubernatorial response was to proclaim three, quote, days of prayer for rain. The days came and went, but no rain. Presumably, Rick was praying up a storm, but not a drop fell from the heavens. Undeterred, the gubernatorial padre simply doubled down on prayer politics. Proclaiming August 6th as a day of prayer and fasting, he invited all other governors to join him in Houston for a 7-hour prayer-a-palooza dubbed The Response. It's billed as, quote, a non-denominational, apolitical Christian event to unify all Americans by calling upon Jesus to guide us through unprecedented struggles. Wait, Jesus? What about all those Americans who are Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, or other faiths? No room at the inn for them? Adding to this PR fiasco, Perry's co-sponsor for the response is the American Family Association, a Mississippi-based extremist outfit infamous for bashing gays and Muslims. This is Jim Hightower saying, the governor's staff loudly insists that his prayer fest doesn't have anything to do with Perry's presidential ambitions, which of course means that it does. But I'm fairly certain that God doesn't want anything to do with this goober's show. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com, like Ron did here. He says, Rick, although it's not talked about, I believe you can trace the decline of U.S. corporation vis-a-vis workers to the rise of the MBA in the late 70s. This is when people stopped being promoted from the shop floor and MBAs started being hired to maximize profit. At the same time, personnel became human resources. Human resources is about maximizing profits. On the heels of these two things came the age of mergers and acquisitions, and we've been going downhill ever since. And you know the reality is, I think he is spot on. Because how many times have working people been doing a job, and this goes back to when I was working on the shipping docks. I was loading trucks 10, 15 years, and I'd get some kid who just got out of college telling me how to load a truck. Or someone who just took on the job telling you how to do something you've been doing for years. And it'd be like you, Jake. If I came into the job and told you how to eat chocolate.
Imagine that.
I don't think I could, but the whole thing is...
Well, it looks to me like you've been doing a pretty good job eating chocolate.
I'm not a big chocolate fan.
No?
No, not really. Could That's my wife. Me. My wife is the big chocolate fan.
Really?
Oh, she loves...
And she's svelte.
She loves chocolate.
And you're not.
look who's talking, Tiny. But you look at this, and the reality is true. I've thought about this, and he just put it in a really... In a real compact way, the rise of the MBA, when we were training people to be on Wall Street and we were training people to be managers. And, I always go back to what my grandfather said. If you end up driving a truck for a living, you're going to be a failure. And I think a lot of people of his generation felt the same way about their kids. If you end up doing that hand labor, if you end up doing the back-breaking work that the parent had to do, somehow you were a failure. And I look at this and this is a good frame that he's put here because it's true. What you've got is a bunch of people who are, nipping at each other's heel. How can we cut costs? How can we, how can we do time studies to cut down the number of steps people take? And really just kind of, how can we stick it to that guy at the bottom?
And they came up with the idea, at least where I worked, and I'm sure in a lot of workplaces, they call it constant improvement.
Yeah.
What they mean is no matter how much production you get out,
never enough.
No matter how well you did, it's not enough.
Never enough. And, that's one of those things that makes you think, though, of how we don't value work. And I think back to a guy, he just popped into my head, guy I worked with a number of years ago. He stopped working loading trucks, making 50 grand a year, a good, solid living with health care and a whole nine yards. He stopped doing that, took a management position for less money, less benefits, less pension, so that he could say that he was in management. And I never understood that mentality. Work is work. It's what pays the bills. You should be proud of that. Just amazing. Thanks for the email, Ron. And again, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all of them personally. Thanks so much. Well, I'm guessing this is the end of the free market. This is where corporations have now decided they're taking over. This is globalization run amok. This is pretty much the end of the world as we know it on the internet. Reuters reported from Singapore today that people and companies will now be able to set up a website with almost any address by the end of next year if they have a legitimate claim to that domain name and, of course, pay a nice hefty fee. They said the internet body that oversees the domain names voted today to end restricting them to suffixes like .com or .gov and will receive applications for new names from January 12th next year with its first approvals likely by the end of 2012. So, you know, no more are we going to be talking about, you know, .com, .gov, .org, .any of those. We're going to be talking about .jake if you got enough money. Or dot Bank of America. So what we're talking about, let's say we do, we take dot Bank of America. It's, you know, no longer does Bank of America have to go country to country and set up a bankofamerica.com or a bankofamerica.uk or a bankofamerica.au or whatever in all of these different countries. They can just set up everything dot Bank of America. So what we're moving towards is a corporate-dominated world. I mean, we've been moving that way for years. But no longer are we talking about nations. No more do these companies have to worry about, you know, the U.S. or the U.K. or Australia or any of these places. They can be their own entity. The Internet gives them worldwide access without having to be local. So instead of being nations, will be corporations. Won't that be great? Won't it be great when we won't have to bicker about anything anymore? Won't it be great when we don't have to talk about politics? Won't it be great when we won't have to vote anymore? Corporations will just take care of it for us. Won't that be great? We won't have to serve on juries. We won't have to do any of that stuff. Interesting. It's called top-level domain names. You know, so these companies at the top, these big wealthy folks who can afford the $185,000 it costs to apply, they're going to be okay. You and I, not so much. So all of the brand names we now know, it'll be dot whatever. So, you know, dot Toyota, dot Apple, dot Coke, you know, whatever. It's all right there. Life will be so much better when we don't have to worry about countries or it'll be so much better. Don't you think, Jake? Just wonderful.
Absolutely.
I mean, because the reality is corporations want to be global. They don't want to be an American company. I think the guy who was the CEO of Dow Chemical said it best. He goes, you know, I want to be in an island somewhere where I'm not an American company. I don't want to have to set up business in each country. I want to be a global country. It's amazing. Just amazing stuff to me. You know, as we look at how quickly the Internet has exploded, how much commerce is there, and now we're talking about global corporations taking over. You look at this this report I saw talking about the supercomputer. And on Monday, an international group of academics, they're the folks who track the speed of these big supercomputers. They recently released their list of the countries that have the, you know, the big powerful supercomputers, and Japan's K supercomputer is now the most powerful computer in the world. And gee, I wonder how their private corporations funded that. If you think that's what happened, I got something for you. But anyway, it was built by Fujitsu. You know, the capabilities of performing more than 8 quadrillion calculations per second, 3 times faster than China's supercomputer, which is in the second spot. In fact, this K computer, this big Japanese brain they've got, more powerful than the top 5 computers. The top 5. It's amazing. In fact, you know, you look at the countries that have them. The U.S. has 5 of the top 10 supercomputers. China has 2, Japan has 1, and France has 1. Japan and China each have 2, and France has 1. So there you go. Those are your super, super duper computers who will be able to perform all of this stuff. In fact, we were just talking in the break, and they were saying that by 2015, I believe it is, they're going to completely go beyond our capacity to do any more with this, with the materials and that we have. So silicone is going to be given way to something else down the road. Don't know what it is, but it's amazing the technological boom. But again, Japan number one, China number two. We have five, and I wonder how much of that is past investment. Just a thought. Just a thought to throw out there. Anyway, Apple has announced its iCloud service, and a lot of folks are, hey, I can put all my stuff on the web, iCloud, yeah, it'd be wonderful. I can get it anytime I want. It's easy access. It'd be fantastic. My problem is there any security out there? Is there any privacy? And there's part of me that goes, maybe in talking with some people who are half my age, in their 20s, maybe the idea of privacy is a dead issue. Maybe we have no more privacy. But there's that little pesky thing called the Constitution. I want somebody protecting my Fourth Amendment rights when I throw something up on the web, and I don't want it to be the prying eyes of everyone, and I certainly don't want our government to be able to get access to it any way they want. But the problem is the laws are so vague that we don't know. We honestly don't know.
The laws are vague, Rick. I mean, you and I both know that once the technology is developed to give you protection, there's somebody already working on how to pass that and how to take advantage of that. So we created this monster. It does a lot of good things, but with it are some negatives. And pretty much we've given up our privacy. Like it or not, we've pretty much given up our privacy.
Not. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
Bye.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. And now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great, thank you.
What's going on in D.C.?
Well, a lot of things are going on in D.C. One of the big things is there going to be a vote this week on defunding Libya? And the answer is probably yes. And it's probably going to happen towards the end of the week, probably right towards the end, when they're going to be debating in the House a Pentagon-related bill. Now, it's possible they could schedule it earlier, but it's unlikely. There were a couple of amendments, resolutions being looked at. One, Dennis Kucinich, Democrat of Ohio, defunds everything right now, this second, instantly gone, bang. The other one, Representative Joe Heck, Republican of Nevada, who's on the Intelligence Committee, is a bit more nuanced. And what that does is it says, well, you can have some funding, but only for withdrawal.
What's the withdrawal? We don't have troops there. We don't have troops there. How can we withdraw?
Well, basically only for sort of stopping, in other words.
Oh, okay.
So those are the two main ones. Now, there may be others floating around, but they're not gaining as much traction as these two. Now, it's possible that something else could happen earlier in the week. The Republicans control the House schedule. The other thing that could blow everything out of the water is we keep being told by Jay Carney, the press secretary of the White House, that President Obama is going to announce soon, that's the direct quotation, the drawdown of troops in Afghanistan starting in July. We know that General Petraeus has visited the White House. We know that he's told him his thoughts. We know that input has been sought from several other sources. The president is making a decision, maybe talking to people, but it's soon. If the president were to announce this week, I'm drawing down forces, and if he were to announce, say, a large number, that might be so popular with Congress that they might do something like delaying or not even having a vote. I don't know. But that could knock them off their game.
That'll be interesting to see. Personally, I'd like to see them all come home and just leave that mess behind.
Yeah, I just don't think that's going to happen imminently.
No, I don't either, but that's my preference. What else is going on today?
One of the other things going on today is it was announced today that the Vice President's debt talks will meet three times this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Senator Mitch McConnell, minority leader, has floated an idea of a short-term debt deal that would go into the fall, no definition being given of what the fall means. So that would basically mean that they could get something done now that would enable them to work on the grand bargain later. It would mean that they'd have to have more than one vote, yes, which isn't necessarily a popular idea, but it might take some of the pressure off. So that's something that will be discussed tomorrow. Chris Van Hollen, representing the Democrats in the House in these talks, seemed to shoot it down a little bit today. But I have to tell you that the way these talks are going, there's enough goodwill at the moment in these talks that ideas that are on the table are frankly on the table.
Right.
And they're talking about everything.
And at the end of it, it's still going to be, I still believe the Democrats will cave. And this will be a majority spending cut side. Maybe there'll be some token revenue enhancements, but I don't look for anything substantial. I look for massive cuts and not much in the way of revenue enhancements.
Well, one word that Lindsey Graham, Senator, used over the weekend, Republican Senator used over the weekend, was tax flattening. He said, frankly, no Republicans are going to vote for a tax increase, but they might vote for tax flattening. And he was talking about the ethanol vote last week, where they voted to get rid of ethanol subsidies. So that made me think that maybe the door's not completely closed on the possibility of voting to eliminate the advantages for the gas companies, the big oil companies. But I don't know that that's the case. But it was interesting that he said that tax flattening was a possibility.
Interesting. Anything else going on in the big city?
A couple of interesting Supreme Court decisions, the main one being that the massive sex discrimination lawsuit by 1.5 million women against Walmart was resoundingly thrown out, or 5-4, but nevertheless it was thrown out and not allowed to proceed by the Supreme Court today.
No surprise there.
No surprise there, really. But nevertheless, it was a big win for business today.
Yeah, well, I mean, this court has been a champion of business. I read a report recently that 71% of all business cases that come before this court are cited for on the side of business. So
it is very much a business-oriented court. A lot of their cases that we don't tend to hear about are business cases. We tend to hear about the flashy cases, the free speech cases, things like that. And, of course, we still haven't had a ruling on that big violent video game case that we're out of California that we're waiting to hear about. That's still pending. And the court's last day is looming, so we're waiting to hear about that. They may not tell us. They may tell us, but they may not tell us.
We will see. Victoria Jones, I appreciate your time and the report from Washington, D.C. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
All right, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. And now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. There were several Supreme Court decisions coming down. The Supreme Court has limited the First Amendment right of government employees, saying a police chief cannot sue over employee retaliation that came after he spoke out on a pay matter. The High Court on Monday overturned a ruling for former Duryea, Luzerne County, Pennsylvania Police Chief Charles Gunardi. After Gunardi successfully won a union grievance, city officials denied his request for overtime pay. Gunardi contended the denial was retaliation for his union grievance, and the Third Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals upheld his victory, but the High Court overturned that decision. The justices ruled 8-1 that government employers can take adverse actions against employees who speak out on private matters. The case now goes back to the lower court. Rick, I got to tell you that strikes a real blow against the right of public employees to and union rights. Real bad decision coming out of there. We did talk about the other bad decision on Walmart. I just want to take a couple seconds here and get some of the particulars. The court did rule 5-4 that as many as 1.6 million women who are current and former Walmart employees cannot sue Walmart for pay discrimination in a class action suit. A lower court had ruled that the women could join together in a class action, but the court did not rule on the woman's claim of systematic and company-wide and promotional discrimination. What brought this on was 10 years ago, a group of women who worked at Walmart stores, led by Betty Dukes, filed a lawsuit alleging the corporation engaged in company-wide gender discrimination by paying women less than men, promoting fewer women to management positions, and promoting male employees more quickly. In the end, the court ruled on the grounds that the class action status that could potentially involve hundreds of thousands of current and former female employees was, in fact, too large. That's just a horrendous decision for basic fairness and justice, a real setback.
Well, again, at the end of this, what it comes down to, it, as Ian Millhiser said earlier, the AT&T decision was much more damaging. When you look at the class action suit and the lessons that corporations are going to learn from both of these, if you're going to do something, do it to a lot of people over a long period of time and steal a little bit. Like that AT&T decision, you know, the fact of the matter is, they stole from a whole lot of people, a very small amount, enough that it wouldn't be beneficial for an attorney to take the case or for you to pay an attorney to take the case. This Walmart decision is pretty much going to decide that the vast majority of those women get no justice. There'll be a handful, and those handful will be decided out of court with a nice, strong gag order to make sure that they never speak another word about Walmart.
Well, what it means is if you go after them individually, I mean, you're going against you touched on it, you're going against all that corporate power, and even if you have the best lawyers in the world, you're going to run out of money, and that's what they depend on. And even if they win, Rick, it's going to be justice denied for long periods.
Well, I mean, the reality
justice
is
delayed anyway.
The reality is Walmart will not die. The chances are that, you know, these women will die long before they see a dime because it's in Walmart's interest and it's in any big corporation's interest to drag this out, to make it as painful as possible, to dissuade others from going after it.
I mean, this is discrimination on a huge and fundamental basis. They're corporate I'm not going to say strategy. It was a corporate culture. Just basically denied women basic rights in so many ways. And this has been going on and on and on.
But here again, at the end of this, we can complain, we can whine. At the end of this, this comes down to one thing. They had a chance to organize. Workers have a chance in this country to stand up and organize and collectively bargain and make sure that things like this don't happen. And the lesson that should be learned from this is not all those poor women got screwed. It should be that all workers are getting screwed, and there's a remedy. There's a way to make sure it doesn't happen. Because do you think Walmart's this great benevolent corporation who gives a rat's behind about them? No.
And I guarantee you, in a union environment, that would not have happened. It would not have happened. Moving on, we talked about the Castle Doctrine, the bill to widen the use of deadly force and self-defense in Pennsylvania is on its way to Governor Corbett's desk. He's expected to sign it in a huge 45-5 vote. The Senate approved the latest Castle Doctrine. If you remember, Rick, last year, Governor Rendell vetoed a civil measure saying it would escalate violence. Even the Pennsylvania District Attorneys Association had previously opposed the bill, but they dropped its opposition after it was amended to make it harder to use as a defense for criminal activity.
According to the Patriot News.
Right. Good report coming out, United Mine Workers. They've had some real problems within their ranks as far as some,
really?
some of their members being killed. But members of the United Mine Workers overwhelmingly ratified a new 5.5-year contract with the bituminous coal operators in a nationwide vote. Under the contract, this sounds like a pretty good deal, Rick. Workers will receive a $6 raise over the term, their largest pay increase in the union's 121-year history. According to United Mine Workers President Cecil Roberts, the raises will begin with a $1 increase in July and another $1 increase in January 1, 2012. Then workers will receive a $1 increase each year until 2016. The agreement retains health care benefits for active and retired members with no cuts and preserves the pension plan. Contract also provides increased benefits for sickness, accident, vision, dental, and a better life insurance terms. That's good news. It's a good contract for those who really absolutely put their life on the line every day to supply our country with energy needs. That's my report, Rick.
All righty, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up.
We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the hell with.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
With the PSECU Home Equity Line of Credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got our rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing light is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You'd say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Smith Show. Yeah, reach up to the sunrise. Yeah, yeah. You do that right away. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. A little labor history. Today, back in 1947, Republicans passed the Taft-Hartley Labor Management Relations Act, basically saying, you know what, people who are going on strike, we're gonna take some of that right back. We're going to set up these funds. We're going to do a whole bunch of really negative things to restrain workers from collectively bargaining. It was vetoed by President Harry Truman today, 1947. Here in 3 days, that veto was overridden by the Republican-controlled Congress, and we are now stuck with all of the very pro-business negative worker effects of Taft-Hartley. Also today in 1977, oil began to flow through the Alaskan pipeline. It was 70,000. 70,000 were people worked on the project, marking the largest private financed construction project in the history of the country. Interesting stuff. A story from North Carolina grabbed my attention today, an AP story. Nearly 35 years after ending the country's most active post-war sterilization program, North Carolina is the only state trying to make amends to thousands of people who cannot have children because of the eugenics-inspired theories about social improvement. And, you know, you go through, and there's in the article they talk about one of the brochures that was running around by this Human Betterment League. And, you know, it sounds so right-wing. I mean, when we look at the right-wing think tanks that are around today, Americans for Prosperity, the American Enterprise Institute, you know, Americans for Dogs and Puppies and all that stuff, the Human Betterment League, which was, you know, one of these groups set up by these really rich people who thought, you know what, we're smarter than everybody else, and we're gonna figure out how to do some fiddling around and make sure that, you know, we have the perfect race. Anyway, in North Carolina, they had a branch there, you know, the wealthy, prominent citizens. Textile magnat James Haynes was one of them. And in their brochure, it said, quote, "You wouldn't give a responsible position to a person of little intelligence, yet each day the feeble-minded and the mentally defective are entrusted with the most important and far-reaching job of all, the job of parenthood." So with this thought in mind, they decided to go around and make sure these people couldn't have children. And I think it's kind of amusing that now they're going to come back and say, oh, well, we're sorry. Yeah, we've ruined all of these lives, and they're talking upwards of 100,000 people across the country that were sterilized because, hey, you know, we can't let those feeble-minded people procreate, can we? And again, it takes me back. It takes me back to my labor history. Remember the movie Norma Rae? The life and story of Crystal Lee Jordan and the J.P. Stevens factory and all that. One of the things that they were fighting was this whole legacy of women having to choose between having children or working in the plant. One of these issues. And again, you know, that's our history. And whenever I hear people saying, well, liberty of contract and, you know, whatever deal the employer and the employee make, that's up to them. You know, let them decide. You know, and I say, well, what if the employer won't hire a woman until she gets fixed? No more kids, or a man for that matter. Can't have our health care costs going up. Just a thought. a little bit of labor history, a little thought, something to think about. That's where we've come from. Talking about hypocritical Republicans, I love this story from Idaho. What is about Idaho? Our buddy Larry Craig, Lusty Larry. Well, the Republican state senator from Idaho, he was evidently arrested Sunday morning, charged with grand theft auto, charged with driving under the influence. Turns out, the guy who's the majority caucus chairman in the Idaho State Senate, Republican John McGee, who has been one of those people that they threw his name out for governor, turns out he went golfing on Saturday, had a couple too many, maybe one or two, and around 3 a.m, they found him jackknifed in somebody's truck and camper in somebody's driveway. Evidently went walking around, decided, didn't want to drive, went walking around, found a truck with keys in it with the camper on the back, and was trying to turn around and jackknifed. So then they're watching, these people are watching from the window, and he's walking up and down the driveway, mumbling to himself. And before the police can get there, he goes back in the camper, falls asleep in a drunken stupor, and he's out. When the cops wake him up, he's talking about going to the promised land. His blood alcohol was only twice the legal limit. And I say only twice the legal limit because I don't know that that's an awful lot. Considering you're talking about 0.08. You know, I look at this guy, should you be walking around muttering promised land? I don't know. You know, I know my blood has been twice, three times beyond that sometimes. You got to wonder. But he, you can kiss that, much like Wiener, you can kiss that promising career goodbye. Nuts. Did you see the John McCain quote this week? He is blaming the wildfires on those illegal immigrants, even though everybody who knows anything is saying, John, sit down, take your medicine. But again, why? You don't want to waste a good frame. You need those good frames. And finally, in our genius thief segment, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I guess this is where all the geniuses go. A guy walked in a convenience store. He was gonna rob the cash register, and the clerk said, "Look, man, I can't open the cash register. You gotta buy something." So the guy reached into his pocket, gave them $1 to buy a pack of gum. At which point he took all the money out, including his dollar. And as he was fleeing, the security cameras got everything, and he was arrested the same day. So good for him. Good for him. Real geniuses there. Sometimes you wonder. But, yeah, and speaking of robbing for a dollar, I all night I've been thinking about that guy who needed health care. So he walks into a bank and says, you know what? I'm robbing the bank for $1. I'll be sitting in this chair waiting for the police. And, you know, the doctor...
I'm assuming they arrested him.
Of course they arrested him. He was in jail. The doctor in the jail hospital... who took care of him, and, you know, I guess they found some things, and they're going to care for him because they have to now. He's a ward of the state. According to the guy who was arrested, you know, the jail doctor was angry at him because he manipulated the system. And, you know, my response back was, well, what would you have had me do? Just die in the street? And there's part of me that believes, yeah, that's what they want.
And my question is, what kind of doctor is he?
I forgot
his Hippocratic oath.
It's more of a hypocritical oath. Anyway, I want to thank our guests. I thank you. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy is coming to the
The Rick.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.